I believe in the Church of Baseball. I've tried all the major religions and most of the minor ones. I've worshipped Buddha, Allah, Brahma, Vishnu, Siva, trees, mushrooms, and Isidore Duncan. I know things. For instance, there are 108 beads in a Catholic rosary and there are 108 stitches in a baseball. When I learned that, I gave Jesus a chance. But it just didn't work out between us. The Lord laid too much guilt on me. I prefer metaphysics to theology. You see, there's no guilt in baseball, and it's never born, which makes it like sex. There's never been a ball player slept with me who didn't have the best year of his career. Making love is like hitting a baseball. You just gotta relax and concentrate. Besides, I'd never sleep with a player hitting under 250, unless he had a lot of RBIs or was a great glove man up the middle. You see, there's a certain amount of life wisdom I give these boys. I can expand their minds. Sometimes when I've got a ball player alone, I'll just read Emily Dickinson or Walt Whitman to him. And the guys are so sweet, they always stay and listen. Of course, a guy will listen to anything if he thinks it's foreplay. I make them feel confident, and they make me feel safe and pretty. Of course, what I give them lasts a lifetime, but they give me lasts 142 games. Sometimes it seems like a bad trade. But bad trades are part of baseball. I mean, who can forget Frank Robinson for Milk Pappas, for God's sake? It's a long season, and you gotta trust it. I've tried them all, I really have. And the only church that truly feeds the soul day in, day out, is the Church of Baseball.
And it's okay if the Cubs lost today. It's all right.
Bull Durham.
Well, that's one of my favorite movies. You'll hear some more clips.
It 2 weeks ago.
Did you? We've pulled clips from The Natural, Field of Dreams. You know what I could not find was Lou Gehrig's farewell speech. It's cut up all over the place, and I didn't want to play. I didn't want to play Gary Cooper doing it because it didn't seem right. So someday I'll find that, and it's a great speech about baseball. So we are talking all things baseball. I'm pretty late. This is my last broadcast on Sunday night, so I'm only going to be doing Monday through Friday. Yeah. So I thought I'd wrap up kind of the. As a tribute to my favorite sport, and the reason I'm here is because of all the great history and tradition of WGN, which has been so tied in with the Cubs for over 90 years, and also because my dad was a great fan of baseball, and when he was ill toward the end of his life was the first time I appeared on WGN in 2001 on Milt Rosenberg's show, and my dad was very sick, and he said, "Well, you know what, kid? If you're on WGN, I guess you're going to be okay." And that was years before I had the opportunity to sit in as a broadcaster. And I want to thank everyone so much for giving me the chance. I know that some people gave up early on. I have learned a lot. I'm still a baby broadcaster. And right now, even what was that?
Sunday. We'll miss you.
I'll miss being here. This has been a lot of fun. But I thought it would be fun to go out on with baseball, even though, you know, it feels like it's not going out on a high. I have guests in the studio who have been cracking me up. While I was listening to Annie's speech, Church of Baseball from Bull Durham, they kept asking me questions, and I was like, I don't know when this ends, but we're going to be talking in the middle of it. I have Larry, Barry, and Jeff, and Jeff is cracking me up because he introduced himself as Mo, which tickled me. And these guys are from Red Hot Ranch, Wiener Circle, and 35th Street Red Hots. What's the overall company name? Is that
They're all separate. The same group, but we just have different names in different areas.
So you all have, but you're all under one umbrella. You're all co-owners of all three of these joints.
Umbrella. Correct. Yeah, a big umbrella. We take up a lot of space.
I would actually like to see the three of you holding one umbrella, walking through the rain. And so now, tell me a little bit about how you guys came together to form this company to run hot dog joints all over the city.
We started out 2005. Uh-huh. Larry and I had been in business before. And then we decided to partner up and open up by Sox Park.
Okay.
And it worked out really well, and, you know, on 35th Street.
Sure.
And we expanded to Red Hot Ranches, we call it, because we added burgers on Ashland. So we call them Red Hot Ranch. And there's one on Ashland and Barry and one near Armitage and Western.
Okay.
So it's just kind of evolved, and we're even looking towards another place. We haven't come up with a location yet, but we're...
Well, I'm thinking Jefferson Park might be a good place.
We're
to
are thinking Jefferson Park.
Are you really thinking just because I told you?
No, I was kidding. But we would.
Well,
we,
right around that blue, right, that, you know, the Blue Line Terminal. I don't know why they're, you know, the Gale Street Inn does very well. Yeah, exactly. You have to get close to that microphone, I told you.
Gale Street Inn, I'm sorry.
Yes.
They do not have a good hot dog stand.
Jefferson, well, I guess Superdog.
Superdog.
Yeah. Is that tough to compete with?
They're tough, but well, we can compete.
Man, hot dog in a box.
We actually beat them on the Rachel Ray Show.
For Best Dogs?
For Best Dogs.
Which location?
Wiener Circle.
With Wiener Circle. Now, how did the tradition of Wiener Circle with the women yelling or the people yelling at customers, where did that evolve? How did that...
Okay, it started... We've been in business 33 years. This is 33 years. Mm-hmm. And about, I was, Barry, my partner here, was working the days, and I was working the nights. And we had, because of two different class of people.
Sure.
People with children and nuns would come in the afternoon.
And then people come in after the last call.
That's right.
Okay, fair enough.
And before last call.
During all the calls.
And it would be like a busy night, like during the summer when it's really hot and lines would be out the door. And... the guy would come in. One day he came in, I remember, and he didn't know where he was. And I said, next. And he said, what do you got? I says, move over to the side. If you don't know blank what you want, then I'll go on to the next customer.
So you started cussing at customers?
Not well, sort of.
By accident.
Larry took care of the bleep for you, too.
He did.
Did you notice that?
I know. I like that. He self-edited that.
So Larry actually called somebody what the blank. The one on your hot dog, and he kept avoiding him.
Wow.
And, you know, because he was like staring into space.
Is that, does that come out of being successful enough that you can just talk to a customer that way a little bit?
It's funny because a lot of restaurant people, waiters and stuff, and bartenders would come in, and we wish we can get away with it. And, and then it evolved with the rest of my employees, and now I look back, and it's amazing how I was able to do
it. You just were at the end of your rope with this guy. Do you remember the guy at all? Do you remember what he ended up ordering?
Yes.
Isn't that great how you remember those?
He didn't even stand up. I mean, he couldn't. He just fainted.
fainted.
Everybody started laughing. All the people, they were hysterical, you know. And it was
Patty. Jeff wants to add to this.
Yeah, Patty, ask Larry about the ketchup can, the number 10
No,
ketchup
we don't
can.
Want to talk about that.
Tell me about the ketchup can. Well, how much swearing is involved in the ketchup can?
No swearing.
No.
Someone, this girl came in and she wanted to use the bathroom. We don't have public bathrooms, but she said it was an emergency. So I says, okay. Someone was by the sink and we have a door back there. And they said, when she comes in, you know, let her in. And
let the bee in.
Yeah, let the bee in. Let the bee in. Well, she heard and she was hysterical and really. Mm-hmm. And she came back, picked her order up, and took it out with her.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, about 3 minutes later, it was the 4th of July weekend, which is real busy.
Sure.
Some guy comes in and reaches, I had a big number 10 can of ketchup, and threw it at me.
What?
Yeah. They rushed me to Illinois Masonic. I had 3 surgeries.
What?
I'll tell you the truth, I think he had it coming.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's what friends are for.
And that was the end of Larry on the night shift.
Yeah.
Was that the end of it?
Yeah, I couldn't
take it. We retired him after that.
Well, how often do you have people that lash out because they don't get what the deal is at a certain...
We get a call. About once a month, we get a call from somebody who says, you know, I was in your establishment yesterday, and you wouldn't believe how they treated me, and I try to explain that it's all in fun, and they really would have no part of that. They couldn't believe that. So.
And you don't have, like, signs?
No.
If you're too delicate to handle it,
and
don't get
in line. Enter at your own risk.
You need something. Do you have that?
No. We should.
Maybe enter at your own risk. Mm. Foul language possible. At what time does it start? It's not all day, obviously. You said you have kids during
after
the day.
Midnight.
After midnight. Yeah. I think that's appropriate. It's kind of like Comedy Central does that.
Right. After dark.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Right.
So the other joints that you have, and I'm going to call, can I call them joints?
Absolutely. Yeah,
the other hot dog joints that you have. Now, do your employees ever give any guff to anybody who orders ketchup on a hot dog if they're over a certain age?
You know, they really don't.
Okay.
When we were opening these other places and knew that there was an affiliation with the Wiener Circle, everyone was asking, is the shtick and the nonsense going to start? But we really didn't want to do that there because there's only one Wiener Circle.
That's right.
You know, so.
Well, and you guys have been in the business long enough to have watched this sort of antagonism towards ketchup. Do you have any idea where this hatred against ketchup started?
I'm 70.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
You look great. Head wound and all.
I know.
I have multiple surgeries.
Me and Joan went
to
the
same. Yeah, but keep in mind, we all have faces for radio.
No, you guys are great.
Except Patty.
But, oh, please.
No, so when I grew up, it was just not allowed. I mean, it was not a Chicago thing. And if you ordered ketchup, they give you dirty looks, the proprietors.
It's always been this way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Since I was, at least since the 50s, anyways.
All right. So, but do we agree? What's the cutoff age? 8?
Yeah. We had a few fathers bring in the sons. Really, it's 16, unless they're accompanied by an adult.
Okay, good to know.
We do that.
Okay, because my son Griffin is 11, and he...
Yeah, no. You have to come in with you.
Yes, I'll bring him. Yes, Jeff.
And
I love that you raise your hand.
Yeah, well, I want to be polite.
Thank you. That's
yeah,
nice.
We don't want to talk over each other.
You're doing
but anyway,
great.
It's actually funny because at the place on Ashland Avenue, the Red Hot Ranch, a family will come in, and they'll say, "And I need 2 hot dogs." And I said, "What would you like on it?" And we put on mustard, relish, onion, and sport peppers. And he goes, he'll look at me and like kind of through the side of his, he'll go like, "Ketchup only." And I know there's a couple little kids standing.
Sure.
So I said, "Yeah, no problem." I said, "How old are they?"
Uh-huh.
"Okay, yeah, we'll do it."
Oh, nice.
Yeah, jokingly.
Yeah.
You got to give them a little bit of wiggle room for that.
Right, people come in from out of town that don't know this rule.
I know.
And these are adults.
Do you ask them where they're from?
A lot of them, yeah, they're from the sticks.
I think Vienna sausage started the no ketchup.
Vienna sausage? All right, we're going to talk a little bit more about the history of hot dogs, and we are hanging out with Barry, Larry, and Jeff from Red Hot Ranch, Wiener Circle, 35th Street Red Hots. They're looking for another location, so if you need a hot dog joint in your area, let them know. And if you have a question for them, 312-981-7200. More with them when we come back on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN.
You know, I really thought you were a ball player.
Well, you were wrong.
Was I?
Yeah. It is only a game, Jimmy. It's only a game, and I don't need this. I have Bob. I don't need this. I don't.
I gave away 5 years at the end of my career to drinking. 5 years. And now there isn't anything I wouldn't give to get back any one day of it.
Well, we're different.
Dottie, you want to go back home to Oregon and make 100 babies? Great, I'm in no position to tell anyone how to live. But sneaking out like this, quitting, you'll regret it for the rest of your life. Baseball is what gets inside you. It's what lights you up. You can't deny that.
It just got too hard.
It's supposed to be hard. If it wasn't hard, everyone would do it. The hard is what makes it great.
I was pulling clips for the show tonight, and I'm joined in the studio, by the way, by Barry, Larry, and Jeff of Red Hot Ranch, Wiener Circle, and 35th Street Red Hots, and more locations soon to be determined. And I was pulling that clip with Tom Hanks and Gina Davis from A League of Their Own, and my son was hanging out with me. I didn't think much of it, and I forgot how much cussing there is in that movie. And Griffin, like, here he is watching, listening to, you know, Woody from Toy Story using swear words. So I felt a little bad about that. But, you know, I mean, the kid still puts ketchup on his hot dogs. What can I say?
Yeah,
okay. So you guys were telling me that you're looking to open another location. We were talking a little bit about the style of hot dogs. And you were saying Vienna Beef, you think, was the company that kind of, you know, started driving people away from using ketchup on a dog.
Yeah, that was kind of Bob Schwartz's idea. He was been with Vienna, God, I don't know how long, for probably 30, 40 years that I can remember back. And he actually wrote a book. No ketchup on hot dogs. They actually sold quite a few copies. He's done really, really well, and he goes around the country telling people that, you know, when you come to Chicago, don't get any ideas of putting ketchup on a hot dog.
Yeah, it seems like a dicey situation. Yes, Jeff.
You know, at 35th Street Red Hot, speaking of ketchup, the employees there put this bell of shame on the wall right in the front of the restaurant. So when someone comes up to the counter, they say, "What do you want on it?" It says, "Ketchup and relish." Go ring the bell.
You have to ring the bell?
And during the ball games, when there's a lot of people in line, someone's got to stop and go ring the bell to get ketchup on
it's
his
a bell
hot
of shame.
It's an embarrassment.
A bell of shame.
Whoa. I kind of love that. You were mentioning, too, something, the Depression era type dog is what you guys specialize at 35th?
At 35th and both of the Red Hot Ranches. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's a hot dog, a simpler hot dog, a perfectly steamed bun, a Vienna natural casing hot dog, because you need that snap when you bite into
you
it. that burst of flavor. Mm-hmm. And mustard relish, onions and sport peppers, piping hot, fresh cut fries right on top. And we wrap it all up together like an atomic combo.
Okay.
It's really a great product.
So,
really.
Well, in the Depression era, I think it was because, you know, when they were bringing their lunches to work, you had to have something portable. It was kind of like where the hot dog evolved.
And for a small price, you could fill yourself up.
It was maybe 10 cents for a hot dog and fries back then. And even though it's called a Depression dog, it really makes you happy when you eat it.
Well, you're all making me happy because you raise your hand. And Larry just raised it. Larry?
Yes.
Just
I'm always
his hand.
Afraid what Larry might say.
You could
say.
Tell him to put his hand down when he
you
raised
did.
His
you
hand.
Did. You did. You said, I have another moment here. I have more to
they
say.
They consider me brain dead, but I'm not.
No, you're not.
During the Depression in the 20s, my parents, you know, I told you I'm 70, so my parents were around at that time.
Sure.
And there was the original one was called Flukies from the West Side.
Isn't that on, that's on Peterson still too, isn't it?
No, that's Wolfies.
That's Wolfies.
Right, but they were related, same family.
Okay.
They were cousins. And they were a nickel.
Hot wow. dog.
That was during the Depression, yeah.
Yeah, so, you go fill yourself up. For a nickel.
Right. It was a meal.
Me and my friend Bob Matskin used to go down there when we were kids. Really. And we...
I'm sorry. Jeff just hit Barry, and I'm not sure why.
I think he said, get Larry off the air here. He's going to embarrass
us
here any minute.
Fine.
He gets so serious, though. You hear that seriousness in his voice?
When we grew up, my mother would give me a quarter. Mm-hmm. Now, this is in the 50s.
Sure.
And the quarter would allow us to have a hot dog and fries, a Coke... You know, and then we go to Heinemann's Bakery, which is still in Chicago now, but they don't have stores, but they had stores in those days, for a 10-cent brownie or a 5-cent brownie, or whatever, but for a quarter. I mean, that's what we ate, you know.
Yeah, you
and that was, my mother would consider that a hot lunch.
Sure.
Instead of eating peanut butter and jelly.
Nice, healthy lunch.
You
could tell from listening to Larry, when you're in the hot dog business more than 30 or 40 years, it makes you nuts.
Yeah. You just kind of ramble.
Nuts.
What happens, the steam from the steam table goes to my brain.
Well, but that's how your skin has stayed so.
It is, yeah.
You do not look like you're 70. Yeah. I should stand over hot dogs.
More like 80.
I had four lifts.
Because what hot dog? I worked at Hollywood Hot Dog that was over on, it was at Harlem and, remember Harlem and
Northwest Highway? Like Harlem and
it became
Foster's
Broadway. Or... It became Hollywood Hot Dog was only there for a little while.
Where was it located?
It was at Harlem and Avondale, where that train is. There's a Brandy's. It's called Brandy's now.
Okay.
We used to have to wear poodle skirts and saddle shoes.
Why not?
Yeah. Wow, that was the era.
That was when I was serving.
Yeah, no, not quite.
No, this was in the
Well, Superdog actually has the car hop service
they
over
do.
There.
Yeah, still, they'll still come out to your car. You still get the tray on there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So what's your what are some of your favorite memories of being in the hot dog industry? I mean, besides the day that you decided to cuss out a customer and started the
Conan
tradition.
O'Brien show was a highlight.
Is that?
Yeah, we were on the Conan show in Chicago. He did his program from Chicago and they had Triumph the Wonder Dog.
Oh yeah, the insult dog.
Right.
Yes. Competing with your employees at Wiener Circle.
And there was a riot. It got 5 million hits and counting today.
Nice.
He actually Jack McBrayer actually picked up a show based on that day, and I think it's coming out.
Comedy on the Comedy Station. This was the first season of that.
From that day that he visited us.
Oh,
that was a funny show.
It's a great memory.
I'd like everybody to
take a look at the clip.
Yeah, the Conan Winter Circle on Conan.
Okay,
that was great.
That is awesome.
And then Rachel Ray, we went.
Yeah, you were telling me you beat out Superdog.
And the judge was
Jerry
Springer.
Oh, really?
Jerry Springer. We didn't know who. It was like Jimmy's Red Hots on Grand and Pulaski, Superdog on Devon and Milwaukee, and then Wiener Circle.
Blind taste testing, obviously.
Pardon?
Blind taste test.
Correct.
Yes,
it was.
Yeah, but we prepared. Rachel had this kitchen, and we all prepared our the way we make the hot dogs. And we didn't know, none of us knew who the judge was. Yeah. They said someone from Chicago, and all of a sudden, Jerry Springer comes out.
Yeah. At Winter Circle, we have a niche that we charcoal broil our hot dogs, unlike most restaurants.
I like that.
Gives you the old backyard flavor. Mm-hmm.
I'll take it boiled. I like it, but I like it charcoal broiled. I like it with grilled onions.
Backyard barbecue.
Nice. Yeah. What were you going to say, Jeff?
Yeah. You know, another highlight from our hot dog life, when we first opened up 35th Street Red Hots in 2005 in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
That was the year the White Sox won the World Series. So, you know, the classic timing is everything.
Sure, that's a, what a great really summer a that great, had to
great
be.
Time. Oh, yeah.
And, a great memory.
And being part of it, seeing all the fans come
being
in.
Being the thick of it, yeah.
Just loving the dogs and saying, you know, this is our hot dog stand. It's real close to the park.
Yeah.
And we're in the postseason.
Yeah, no kidding. What a, that's a great year.
Oh, you know what else was a good memory, if I got a second?
Yeah.
Way back, how long ago? Probably 20 years ago. What was the magazine?
I know.
Not ESPN.
Here, you forgot the magazine. Let me just go to Bob real quick.
Yeah.
Was it the, which one, the Chicago magazine, or was it?
No.
One of those magazines, yes.
You know, the sports magazine.
Sports Illustrated?
Sports Illustrated, sure. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, I hit a little blank there. And
no, it's, they, please.
They were going around all the ballparks all around the country.
Uh-huh.
And they went to, like, Dodger Stadium and said, when you go there, have the fish tacos, and when you go here, have this. And when you go to Wrigley Field, don't eat at Wrigley Field. Stop at the Wiener Circle before you get to Wrigley Field. Take them into the park and sit up in the bleachers.
What a great tribute. Let me just get Bob real quick before we go to a break, because he wants to reminisce about hot dogs, too. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you guys doing? It's Taxi Driver Bob.
Hey.
My first job was working over at the Bunny Hutch, and I lived in Skokie at the time. This was 1975. I had to take two buses and walk from Devon, California, over to Devon and Lincoln, and I got paid $1.75 an hour.
Oh.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with June Klatko, but her husband was the chief of police in Northfield.
Northfield.
I really enjoyed working in that hot dog stand.
I don't know. I don't know what they're. I'm not sure how to gauge their reaction, but yeah.
Well, because Larry knew them well.
Yes,
right? And that was where the novelty golf is. It was like sports entertainment. Yeah.
And the batting cages
there, right?
Yeah,
right,
they still
right,
do.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Those raw lights that go along the whole line of the property there, I dug the ditch for that at $1.75 an hour. Now, that's slave labor.
And
boy.
That's being young, too, isn't it? That's
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it was a fun job. A friend of mine worked over there with me, and it was my first job, and lots of good memories from that. I enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, well, thanks, Bob. Those first jobs are always the best, aren't they? Have a great night. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. You have a
thanks.
Good one.
I want to thank my guests in studio for coming down here. And I know that you probably, this is when it starts getting really busy for you guys. I know it's probably busy all the time, but this gets crazy because now everyone's going to be, whether they're going to the games or just it's summertime.
After
so,
the game.
Yeah. And so thank you again to Barry, Larry, and Jeff from Red Hot Ranch and 35th Street,
Red Hots
and Wiener Circle. And go get a hot. I might go stop tonight.
Well, tell them you're coming.
Yeah,
make
tell
sure
them.
Ask for Erica.
Yeah, the girl in the Cubs hat with the pigtails.
Make sure you come.
By the way, we have the best chocolate shakes in the city.
I've heard and I've seen the video.
Make sure you're
careful
after midnight.
Yeah, after
careful.
Yes, it'll have to.
Well,
be,
it will be.
It'll be around 2:30 or 3 in the morning. Thank you again, you guys. Everyone, go get your hot dogs with these guys, or you know, where you like your favorites. But it sounds like you guys have some of the best. More after this. I'm Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN.
Ray, people will come, Ray. They'll come to Iowa for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door as innocent as children, longing for the past. Of course, we won't mind if you look around, you'll say. It's only $20 per person. They'll pass over the money without even thinking about it. But it is money they have and peace they like.
Ray, just sign the papers.
And they'll walk out to the bleachers. Sit in shirt sleeves on a perfect afternoon. They'll find they have reserved seats somewhere along one of the baselines where they sat when they were children and cheered their heroes. And they'll watch the game. And it'll be as if they'd dipped themselves in magic waters. The memories will be so thick, they'll have to brush them away from their faces.
Ray, when the bank opens in the morning, they'll foreclose.
People will come, Ray.
You're broke, Ray. You sell now or you lose everything.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, is a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good, and it could be again. Oh, People will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
And we still come. We go to the games, even if it's the Cubs. And, we give up hope on opening day, but we still go to the games, and we love our game. I have in studio with me Brandon C. Price, who is with Cupid Players and Vamp. And we also have my producer, Weeknights. Craig Collins is in the studio. LF Garris is in the booth. Bill Cerrones. Oh, no, we have Nick DiGiorgio up in traffic and Steve Ruxton. And I want to get to our guest because he's been holding on the line very patiently. He is the official baseball historian for Major League Baseball. We have on the line John Thorne, and I'm so nervous right now, John, because you know more than anybody about baseball. I'm just going to go ahead and assume that. Would you lay claim to that?
No, I wouldn't.
I need you to, just for this.
I don't think being a trivia expert makes you the smartest guy in baseball, which I'm not either.
Well, I don't think that you're a trivia expert because it seems like you really like to get into the heart of what, you know, it means to the history of baseball. Because I was reading a little bit about the evolution of sports writing, in particular when it comes to baseball, and even the evolution of baseball itself, whether or not it was Abner Doubleday who created it. That's what we always think, isn't it?
Well, it has long been thought, but for the last 50 years or so, anybody who's a smarty pants about baseball knows the Abner Doubleday story is our equivalent of Santa Claus and Dracula mixed together.
Wow.
There's nothing in it. The candidates for replacement, Alexander Cartwright, principally, are equally fraudulent.
Well, why is there so much mythology about the creation of baseball?
Well, we like to think that some ingenious lad on a summer day came up with a bright idea, and here we are 140 years later, 170 years later, whatever, celebrating his invention. We like to think that baseball had an Edison, but baseball had its Darwin instead. We evolved this game and are still evolving it.
All the way back to 1791 parts of it?
And farther back, because if they banned it in 1791, you know it wasn't invented in that year.
Sure. It had to have parts of another sport kind of cobbled together.
There are many bat and ball games, but a bat and ball game known as baseball was played here before the Revolution, probably by the 1730s.
Now, I'm looking at some of the titles of the books that you've written, including The Glory Days, New York Baseball, 1947 to 1957. I'm guessing one of my guests in the studio, Craig Collins, would love to talk a little bit about that team as well.
Really good teams, then.
I love all of it. It's not just that I like the folks who were running around before the Civil War, although that is my specialty.
Sure.
I watch the ball game tonight. It's opening day, it's opening night, and it's a ritual. It's something I've done for the last 60 plus years.
And which game did you watch?
Cubs and Cards.
Oh, there you go. So are you a Cubs fan?
No, but I'm a baseball fan.
Exactly.
And I'm a fan of baseball ceremony. And opening day, you've got to watch whoever's playing.
And what are your, do you have any thoughts, reflections on what the Cubs are doing right now with not having the park ready to go for opening day?
I think that's okay.
You do?
I think the modernization project is necessary. And I think it's the way to preserve Wrigley, because otherwise it's basically a 14,000-seat stadium that has grown up in this jerry-rigged fashion, and it cannot sustain itself without a massive renovation and alternative revenue streams. So I think the new ownership is doing a pretty good job.
Well, look at that. Somebody from outside of Chicago can only say that. I think the rest of us have stronger opinions.
Well, I did come to Chicago to testify on behalf of the Landmarks Commission maybe 15 years ago when the Tribune Company was trying to modify Wrigley in certain ways that would have altered its architectural character. And at that time, I was absolutely against those changes. But progress is irresistible.
Well, I mean, where does Wrigley Field rank amongst all the other stadiums? It seems like we're pretty far behind when it comes to modernizing the facility.
Well, the amenities aren't there. But what you've got is a million memories. You know, it is the museum of Chicago. It's not art and science. It's not the big places. This is the people's museum.
You know, some people have argued though that Wrigley Field doesn't necessarily have happy memories, and places like Yankee Stadium, which I don't know what your feelings were when they tore that down, had a lot of really happy memories before they bulldozed
it. But you can't just shoehorn happy memories into winning. I mean, there's so much that goes into baseball
that's
bigger than
true,
that.
That's true.
Yes, John?
No, I agree that baseball memories are more than victorious games. Roger Angels said that baseball is more about losing than it is about winning, and that's why it resembles life.
Right. Is there a particular, when I was growing up, my dad was a big fan of baseball history himself, and he would always tell me stories, and not having ever seen any of those ball players, his favorites were the ones we all know about, like Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth, but he would tell me stories about the Delahanty brothers. Can you tell me a little bit about them?
Well, there certainly were enough of them.
Yes.
I think five of them made the major leagues, and I think seven of them played professional ball, but the one that we remember most is Ed Delahanty, who was a fearsome hitter in the 1890s and the first decades of the 20th century. And alas, he is more famous for the circumstances of his death than for his batting prowess and his batting championships. When he was playing for Washington in the American League in 1902 or 3, he got into an altercation and he was probably drunk. And he was on a rail train going across a bridge, crossing the Niagara Waterfall area, and appears to have slipped between the cars and met his end.
Yeah, he was very, very colorful story, and I don't know why it was such a big impression on my dad, who wasn't born until 1933, but he would tell me stories about Ed Delahanty as though he had seen him play. And
well, I feel the same way. I feel the same way about King Kelly and Jim Creighton and Cap Anson. I mean, my memories of them are inseparable from my memories of ballplayers I actually saw, Mickey Mantle, Duke Snider, Willie Mays, and so forth.
Yeah, we were watching, I've told this story many times, when the movie Field of Dreams came out, and the players were taking the field, not just the Black Sox, but then other players, and they didn't have names on their jerseys, and my dad was like, oh, there's Mel Ott, and all, you know. And of course, one of our favorite lines from that is in regards to Ty Cobb and how much of a dirty player he was. How frequent was it to be a dirty player, to play like that, sharpening your spikes or, you know, sliding so you came in high on someone's leg?
Well, baseball encourages you to push the envelope. Mm-hmm. Cheating is at the core of the game. We steal bases.
Right.
We steal signs. So there is a certain point at which ingenuity is no longer praised, and if you take a substance that makes you 40 pounds heavier, we think that that's bad taste.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in baseball that, you know, whether it's gambling and, like you said, the whether it's human growth, what do they call them?
Human growth hormone.
Or personal performance drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Andros.
We are talking to John Thorne, who is the official baseball historian for Major League Baseball. That's just fun to say. And is the author of numerous books, including Total Baseball. Actually, Total Football. So I know who to talk to when football season starts again, sir. And I encourage our listeners. Sir, do you mind hanging out with us, John, for another segment? We're going to take a quick...
My pleasure.
Oh, wonderful. We appreciate that. 312-981-7200 if you have a question or comment. We'd love to hear from you. You're listening Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. It's all baseball tonight.
Everybody in the shower! Anybody in the shower in 10 seconds going to get fined $100!
Larry! One Mississippi... Two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four Mississippi,
get in
five
there.
Mississippi,
hurry it up.
Six Mississippi, seven Mississippi, eight Mississippi, nine Mississippi, ten Mississippi.
You guys, you lollygag the ball around the infield. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. Did you know what that makes you, Larry?
Lollygaggers.
Lollygaggers. What's our record, Larry?
8-16.
8-16. How'd we ever win 8?
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle. This is a simple game. You throw the ball. You hit the ball. You catch the ball.
That's really all it is. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. We have on the line with us John Thorne, who is the official historian of Major League Baseball. He also is a senior creative consultant to Ken Burns Baseball, and we're so excited to have you on the line. We're all a little bit giddy in the studio, John. just because, I mean, like, I thought a name like Ed Delahanty that most people haven't heard of, and it's just great to hear you, you know, tell their stories and bring it to life for us. And then that...
And I are old pals.
Who is that?
Ed and I are old pals.
Old pals. But now, first of all, I guess while we have been playing clips for movies, is there a baseball movie that jumps out at you as one of your favorites?
I was surprised that Moneyball engaged me as much as it did. You know, I'm not a big fan of baseball films.
Okay.
I think, you know, Field of Dreams is a three-hanky movie for guys. And Bull Durham, formerly my favorite, I think was surpassed by Moneyball.
Huh. I was watching some clips of that too. There's a there's some great clips. How can you not get romantic about baseball? And that I think is what is so great. For anyone who grows up playing or watching baseball or is in the stands with their dad, that's a big part of it. For me, as a kid growing up playing, I was telling Brandon this last week. There's a theater of baseball that you know, one, what Moneyball shows is behind the scenes, all the you know, how you put together a good team. For me, what I loved about Bull Durham was the antics on the field, the camaraderie. You know, the good players versus the wise, you know, the wise seasoned players. So what drew you to baseball, do you think, when you were, you know, finding your focus and as a writer?
I think baseball provides us with extended family. Mm-hmm. It provides us with heroes. It provides us with legends. It makes us think that one day we might plug into something much larger than ourselves. And in my case, I was not born in this country. So I came here at age 2 and a half, wondering how to become an American. And it seemed that baseball was the ticket, particularly the cards at first, but later the game itself.
What an insightful child you must have been trying to figure out how to fit in. I like that image of you as being a toddler going, I think it will be baseball. And I kind of imagine that's how you were. Did you?
I think every kid is trying to fit in.
Absolutely.
And boys, perhaps more so than girls, are obsessed with mastery. Mm-hmm. And the baseball numbers give you a shot at mastery.
Do you think that it's still as much of America's game as it was back then when there were regional teams and it really did provide you with an extended family with the people that live next door to you because everybody went to the game? Has it lost that for you, or is it still the thing that ties America together, proverbially?
I think baseball is the game that ties you to the former versions of yourself, and it ties you to ancestors, and it ties you to people you went to the ball game with who are perhaps no longer on this planet. And it connects you to a history that's larger than your own, so it makes you feel very American. I think that baseball is the family scrapbook, the album of America in a way that no other sport is, and it's the history of the game. Larry Ritter, who wrote The Glory of Their Times, the best of all baseball books, liked to say, the best part of baseball today is its yesterdays, and I think that's eternally true.
But wouldn't baseball, because I get in this argument all the time with friends that are basketball people, or, you know, something, ice soccer, whatever you Yankees call it.
People aren't there.
Yes.
But I don't even know, for me, if it's the depth of how the history of it, but it's the anticipation of it. It's there is no anticipation in football. The snap goes and you go. Same with basketball, same with soccer. They're all squares and two goals and an object. But baseball is in the – it's like a horror movie. You don't see the bad guy instantly. You see the pitchers wind up, and you see the guy on second base trying to see what the grip is like, and you see the outfielder crunch the grass under one leg and then the other, getting ready for it. And that I think that, to me, is why it's so much better than everything else.
Everything else. I agree.
I'm with you. Baseball is the greatest game ever. And I love football, and I love basketball, and I love hockey, and I follow all of them. But football is such a complicated game. But baseball is beyond complicated; it's complex.
Absolutely.
And a deeper game, and a more emotionally resonant game. It's not merely visceral.
I come back to I hate coming back to, you know, cricket ball players and even alluding to the Black Sox or Pete Rose, but I always get in arguments with people about Shoeless Joe Jackson, and I don't know how much you could tell us about. I mean, I've heard stories that he had tried telling Comiskey that there was something going on and wasn't able to, like, he sat outside of his office. Have you heard those stories?
Sure. My position on Jackson is that there's no question he took $5,000.
Right.
He tried to give it back, they say.
Mm-hmm.
But he took it.
He took it.
So he was in the presence of gamblers. He was in the presence of conspirators, and he took money. So he's guilty. Now, the question about Jackson is not so much as to whether he was guilty, but whether we ought to forgive him.
Right. And where do you stand on forgiveness for some of these ballplayers?
I think Jackson was banned for life, and in case nobody's noticed, he's dead.
Oh, I love that.
Is that what you'll say about Rose?
On Rose, I can take no particular position. He's so complicated because he has layered on all these levels of denial.
Yeah, valid.
And 15 years involving others in lying on his behalf who are now deeply resentful, including some current members of the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Before we let you go, because we're nearing the end of this segment, I know that Brandon had some thoughts about the before it was a live ball, the dead ball game.
Oh, I have a ritual.
You have a ritual?
That every time before spring training starts, and you know, there's no fantasy yet. There's all the trades are done pretty much. The Braves have thrown their team away again this year, so I'm so lost. So I always every year, Ken Burns, all 11 episodes. 2 hours each. It is my favorite thing, and the history and the and right before the live ball era switches over, I just think that's every great baseball fan needs to watch that. And honestly, I forgot my question, but thank you so much for making that a thing, because it is a part of my life, and it'll be a tradition that I pass down to everyone.
Well, for those who don't know, John, tell us what the game before live ball was.
Well, before 1920. A ball might last 5, 6, 7 innings and become discolored with tobacco juice and dirt, become very hard to see and very soft and mushy, so hard to drive to distant parts of the outfield. So home runs were scarce, and speed and guile were of the essence. And we used to see triples. Triples have disappeared. It was a faster, more intricate game. And many of us modern fans, including some in your studio, like it better than what we're looking at lately.
Do you think that it swung too far in the batter's over the past century in the batter's favor, with strike zones getting smaller and no longer being able to affect the ball in any way, and blinds coming up in the back so they can see it in the backdrop? Would you like to see it swing back in some way eventually, or do you think it's where it's evolved where it should be?
I'm a fan of evolution, and I like to sit at a distance. Now, I know that if there were not periodic interventions by the rules makers on behalf of batters, everybody would be batting 170 today. Pitchers dominate. So they will dominate and dominate and dominate until something checks them. Now, whether that check is a change in strategy, like people defeating the shift by hitting to left, by hitting to the opposite field, or whether there has to be some formal intervention, such as instructing umpires to stop calling strikes at the shins, I don't know.
Well, there you go. John Thorne, I have so many more questions. There's so much I didn't even get to. I didn't even talk about Tris Speaker, who my dad, another player that my dad would always talk about. Can we invite you back to the show some other time?
It would be my great pleasure.
And where should people go find your... I know that you have blogs that you also write for...
Our Game, yes. I write twice a week, mm-hmm. sometimes more frequently, Our Game at MLB Blogs.
Mm-hmm. And it's some great writing.
This coming week, starting tomorrow, I've got a 5-parter, a previously unknown autobiography of Babe Ruth that he wrote in 1920.
Wow. What?!
Oh, my God. My dad's going to be so disappointed he passed away before he could read
that. Tune in tomorrow.
Thank you, John. You know, I want to talk to you about that. Craig will be getting a hold of you. Elif and Craig will touch base with you. Thank you so much for your time. This has been wonderful, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you. Lots of fun for me.
Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN.
Give me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful, you had to be you. had champions. It had champions. I wandered around.
Marla, we gotta go. Come on. Come on, we gotta go.
I sing it to Nelson. Ain't I, baby?
You sure are.
Marla, come on.
No!
I could take her home. It'd be an honor.
Ain't he something could make me be blue?
That's Marla Hooch finding love on a night off from the Rockford Peach Games. We have on the line with us Megan Cavanaugh, who played Marla Hooch. You know her from so many other movies like Robin Hood, Men in Tights, and she's a tremendous voiceover actress. But we're doing all things baseball tonight. Hey, Megan, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am great. Oh, this is one of my favorite characters in all moviedom because, she's a power hitter. Her dad, that scene where her dad says to John Lovitz, you know, please, you know, her mom died. That whole speech is so beautiful. I'm a little bit tongue-tied having you on the air. I just want to tell you that right now. I'm a big fan. I'm sure you've been asked many, many, many times. What's one of your favorite memories of shooting A League of Their Own?
Well, you know, my favorite memory was shooting at Wrigley. It was a closed set, and my real father is like the most diehard Cub fan in the world. And I asked if he could come to the set that day, and they let him. And so I saw him arrive at the field, and he undid his tie, and he was looking around like he was an 8-year-old boy. And we both sat in the dugout and just sat there together and had sort of a religious experience. It was amazing to be able to do that and let him be able to get him in there and, you know.
Yeah, what a great moment to have with your dad. Where did you grow up in Chicago?
Yeah. I grew up in River Forest, Oak Park River Forest area. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my parents still live in Oak Park, and my brother lives in Oak Park, and my sister lives in Oak Park, and then my other brother lives in up north, like kind of near Crystal Lake.
Do you get a chance to come home? Do you get a chance to come home very often?
I do a lot. In fact, I'm going to be in Aurora, Illinois for 2 months this summer doing Menopause the Musical at the Paramount Theater, I believe.
That's a great theater.
So I'm going to be there for 2 months. I'm so excited. And I'll get to be near my parents and see my sisters and brothers and be good.
Yeah, because right now you're in New Mexico doing Menopause the Musical.
Yes. I sure am. I'm on tour.
And I thank you for taking time out.
Good.
Well, what a fun
my
time.
Pleasure.
Well, now, when you, so were you performing in Chicago? You were an actress in theater here in Chicago when you auditioned for A League of Their Own?
Actually, I auditioned in L.A.
You did?
I moved to L.A. in 88, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so they you had to play baseball before you could read.
Okay.
So I got into a game. And I played really, really well. And they came up to me and they were like, who are you? And I snuck in.
Really?
I snuck into the game. Because I had a friend who had an appointment and was playing in the game. And she was like, just come with me. And I was like, okay. And I did. And mm-hmm. I kind of lied and I got in. And the rest is history.
Now, the signs with Gina Davis and Tom Hanks, where you're in and out of the box. I want to know how long, because you were so cute and so funny. I mean, you're playing this tough, hard-hitting ball player. It was this beautiful little dance in and out of the box trying to figure out whose signs you're going to take. It's so great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, had to shoot that a couple of different times, and they were going to go out and have to change the leaves, the leaves' colors, because they didn't end up having to do that, but it was crazy. They were going to have to like go out there and like paint the leaves in the background.
Okay.
Before, you know, digital effects.
Sure.
So, but yeah, I had, that was a blast. Doing the whole movie was a blast. It was just, it was a dream come true.
Well, it is a magical movie. I mean, for girls who grew up, I played Little League baseball. So, I mean, when people talk about watching Field of Dreams and they cry with their dad, I do. I cry for a Field of Dreams, too. But for me, I cried a lot during League of Their Own. I mean, that's why, because when you first are in the movie, it's inside. And it reminded me of, I played at Norwood Park and we would have our Little League drafts inside. So it was just like that. I mean, like, there was so much in that movie that was so just heartbreaking for me, because you knew you knew the history of it. You knew it was going to come to an end. And but you guys did a great job of encapsulating that. And that cast, how wild to be hanging out with Rosie O'Donnell and Madonna and Gina Davis.
Oh, my God. For real. That was, and the first thing that we shot, the very first thing, was my wedding.
Right.
So, like, you know, we got to the set, and Gina Davis and Madonna and Rose, all these people are my bridesmaids, you know. That was the very first thing we shot. Yeah,
Madonna. That's spectacular. Yeah, because that's the other. Well, the first scene that you guys meet is when you and Dottie, and I can't remember Dottie's little sister now.
Lori Petty, she played Kit.
Kit, right. You guys encounter Madonna and Rosie, and Madonna throws that ball at you. It's one of my favorite things. it's just so, I mean, Gina Davis was so badass in that moment.
I know, I love that. She's very badass, and she's so smart. She's mental and just a wonderful human being. Just a great gal.
I had heard rumors, and I never hear anybody talk about this. Was there a different lead in Gina Davis's role? I don't know if that's something you ever want to talk about. Yes.
Deborah Winger was originally cast. There was an issue with, it was a contractual thing. I don't know really the ins and outs of it, but I just know that she was our fearless leader. And, you know, we did like a few months of baseball training before we did that movie, and she was our captain. And then right before we started shooting, she said, "You guys, I can't do the movie. I got to go." And she was crying, and we were all upset, and we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't have a captain. We didn't know who it was going to be. And then Gina showed up, and it all worked out great. But I mean, for a while though, we were just like, "Oh my God, what's going to happen? Who's it going to be?" You know.
Well, what always cracked me up is that Gina Davis is so tall. So to be a catcher just made me laugh how hard it would be to be Gina Davis getting behind the plate. And because Lori Petty had been cast, I'm guessing, to look like Deborah Winger, sort of. They had a similar look.
Right.
What are you?
And they were very competitive, too.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine. Were they really? You mean Gina Davis and Lori Petty, or?
No. Lori Petty and Deborah. Like, I mean, a fun competitive.
Sure.
But they had, like, this great kind of, you know, sisterly, like, competitiveness, and it was just very different. When Gina came in, it was awesome, but it was different. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
and how often do people ask you about A League of Their Own? Because I felt bad, like, I talked to Mark DiCarlo, and I'm like, I want Megan Cavanaugh on my show, please.
You know what? I get asked about it at least a few times a week.
Oh, wow.
When I'm out on tour, people, I get talk about it pretty much daily, because I'm doing shows and people know that I'm, you know, that I did it. And so they'll come up and they'll be like, "That was my favorite movie."
Sure.
Well, it's based on those real women that play ball from 43 to 54. And some of them were with us. And so we had this great, you know, all these great coaches, you know, telling us, giving us little phrases to say, like, while we were playing and, you know, all of that. And we just felt like it was such an honor to be showing their lives, you know.
And were many of them in the end of the movie where you guys are being inducted into the Hall of Fame? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And in that game, the game that they play at the end of the movie.
Sure.
Those were all the original players. Yeah. A lot of them.
That's such a cool moment. Will you do me a favor? When you're coming to Aurora to do Menopause and Musical, will you come and do our show? We'd love to have you in studio if you're up late. I would love to. Yeah,
Absolutely love to.
It would be our honor. And we've had so much fun talking to you and catching up with you. I know that you've got a busy schedule. I don't want to keep you up too late.
No worries. But Patty, I want to tell you one thing.
Yes.
We're going to be doing an autograph signing at the League of Their Own. It's going to be Penny Marshall and Lori Petty and me and Tracy Ryder, Annie Cusack, Ann Ramsey, who else is there? Patty Pelton.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a bunch of us. And we're doing a League of Their Own. There's going to be two screenings of the movies, and we're doing signings. And I think it's going to be at Rosemont. I'm not
what?
Sure. Oh. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's where it is.
I must be there. That's great. Yes. That's tremendous.
We'll have to come.
All right. So let me.
It's going to be the first weekend in May.
First weekend in May. Okay. So we have each other's information, and let me know about that. Unless I would love to have you back to talk about that. And I'm going. I'm going to get my tickets right now. I can't not be there.
Awesome.
It'll be wonderful to meet you. Wonderful. And again,
wonderful to meet you too, Penny.
Oh, and well, Mark DiCarlo, our mutual friend, said so many great things about you. So I know
right off.
Oh, isn't he great?
He's my cartoon husband.
I know, on Jimmy Neutron. That's right.
Right.
Do you want folks to follow you on Twitter or Facebook? Do you keep up with those things? Because I'm so bad at it.
I do. I kind of do. I don't know. But I do have a website, too, MeganKavanaugh.com, which lists like where I'm going on tour and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff, too. So if people want to go there, they can. And,
great.
I would love to. I have Twitter. I just, I don't use it very well.
I know. I don't update mine enough either. But we look forward to having you at the Paramount Center in Aurora for Menopause the Musical this summer. And we will make sure we get information about the League of Their Own signing and the viewing and all of that stuff and the rest of the cast that's coming. But really, we want to meet Marla Hooch.
Yay. Well, thank you. I look forward to meeting you.
Thank you so much. Have a great and be safe on your travels. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.
Okay, take care. Bye. I'm such a geek. That was so much fun. More after this on 720 WGN.
Now, during Menards Project Day sale, it's the perfect time to start your spring projects. Save big on storm doors, entry doors, and more. Add the perfect finishing touch to your doors with Schlage and Dexter lock sets. Choose from Menards' huge selection, including the Byron stainless steel passage knob, just $888. Save big on Schlage and Dexter lock sets all on sale. Plus, buy four Schlage or Dexter lock sets and get the fifth free.
Save big money at Menards.
Good morning.
Good morning. You seem to be in great spirits.
Well, I took your advice and called the Illinois Tobacco Quit Line last week, and I don't know if you've noticed, but I haven't had a cigarette in 4 days.
Really?
Not one. They totally get how hard it is, and they helped me put together my own personalized quit plan. It's right here, quityes.org.
Okay.
See all these great resources, and they sent me this quit kit with really helpful information. And if I get a craving, all I got to do is call 866-QUIT-YES and talk it through with a counselor.
I cannot wait to tell the kids tonight. A new year, a new you. This message made possible by the funds received from the Illinois Department of Public Health.
Are you one of the more than 100 million Americans without dental insurance? Now, for as little as $1 a day, you can have full dental coverage from Dollar a Day Dental, voted the best dental plan in the nation by consumers in 2014. With Dollar a Day Dental, there are no waiting periods, no exclusions for pre-existing conditions or age, and preventive care is covered 100%. That's right. Get covered today for everything from simple exams and cleanings to x-rays and complex procedures, such as orthodontics and even dentures. With a network of over 260,000 dentists nationwide, you can find a dentist right in your neighborhood, all starting at less than $1 a day. But you must call 800-404-2320. A surprise root canal or braces for your teen could cost you thousands. So call 800-404-2320 now and get covered immediately. Call 800-404-2320. The call is free and the work is 100% guaranteed. Call 800-404-2320. 800-404-2320.
Palm Sunday, 1965, 50 years after one of history's biggest tornado outbreaks. Tom Skilling brings you Survivor Stories, tonight's cover story on WGN-TV News at 9.
Say, Evelyn, can I ask you a question? You got a moment?
Mm-hmm. Which team do you play for?
Well, I'm a Peach.
Well, I was just wondering, because I couldn't figure out why you would throw home when we've got a two-run lead. You let the tying run get on second, and we lost the lead because of you. Now you start using your head. That's not love. That's 3 feet above your ass. Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Why don't you leave her alone, Jimmy?
Oh, you zip it, Doris. Rogers Hornsby was my manager, and he called me a talking pilot pig. And that was when my parents drove all the way down from Michigan to see me play the game. And did I cry?
No.
No. No. And you know why?
No.
Because there's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball. No crying.
What's the matter, Jimmy?
What? She's crying, sir.
I didn't mean to do that.
Perhaps you chastise her too vehemently. Good rule of thumb. Treat each of these girls as you would treat your mother.
Anyone ever tell you look like a penis with a little hair on?
Okay, can I tell you how hard
get
it was?
Oh, no,
right
no,
now,
no,
get
Can I tell you how hard it was for me to explain to my son, my 11-year-old son, Griffin, that Woody would say such a thing to another human being, that you look like a penis with a hat? Griffin was appalled. He was disappointed in Tom Hanks. I said, you know what? Actors have these moments. By the way, in the studio with us, we have Joseph Giannini from Tortas and Tacos, and also Two Italians, Pizza and Delaria, whatever it is. Two Italians, Deli and Pizza. I know. Delaria would be great. I don't have to say all those words anymore. Delaria. See? Just combine
say,
them.
Say food.
Food. And Paired Wine Company. We also have producer Craig Collins, my Monday through Friday producer. And by the way, I am losing Sunday night. I'm going down to 5 nights a week. I'm not leaving WGN. They will have to drag me kicking and screaming from the building. Security, they'll have to get all the guards on me to leave WGN. So that's not happening. I'm just not doing Sunday nights. I'm so sorry, Elif. We have Sam Peniotovich with us in studio, who is at the game. And we also have Brandon C. Price with Vamp and a baseball fan. And we've been geeking out all night.
It's been incredible already.
We've been like, every time we get someone on the phone, like, we're just like, I don't know what to say. Sam was at the game tonight, today.
Yes.
Yes. And already has a wonderful, you just seem like you're just bristling with joy and happiness with having been there.
You know, most openers, Patty, whatever sport it is, you're excited about the product on the field and the team and the moves they make. The problem with what happened at Wrigley today was you had a double-sided issue. You had the team and then you had this mess of a situation with the ballpark. This was the most erratic situation I've been at in my entire life, just because the bathroom lines were a half hour long.
Not just that, but Sandra Jindra from WGN News posted a picture where, like, you couldn't tell where the men's lines were or the women's lines were.
People were using their beer cups.
No.
I swear.
You drink a six-pack, you're not waiting 30 minutes. That's scientifically impossible.
I talked to one fan who had said, you know, the quickest way to get into the bathroom is to say you have a child in there.
Right. Oh,
my. So they were trying to use excuses to get into the bathroom. It took me 20 minutes to get out of the media parking lot.
Is the one street closed off where they're still doing construction? Is that part of the traffic problem?
There are like 3 one-ways in a half block radius, which
all
makes no sense.
All the same direction.
So they wave you left, and then you get left, and the guy that is standing there tells you to go right, but then you can't go right because there's a fire truck there. And not to mention, I mean, outside the ballpark, I don't know if you heard what Jason Hamill said, one of their starters. He said it looks like Baghdad. Now, I wouldn't go that far, but there's just construction all around the place and also inside.
Right. Wow, that sounds so frustrating.
Do you think somebody got in real big trouble because they're not done by opening day? Or was that the plan?
Do you think they care because they're going to make money anyway?
They sold out. 35,000 plus still came.
Yeah. Right. But, I mean, surely somebody took the ruler on the hand for that, right?
I get the sense.
Oh, sorry, we're not done. I don't know. Just let them pee in a cup.
Yeah, I mean, and fans will still show up. They'll just know to bring somehow get one of the, what are those, what do they have the advertisements for late night where you can just have your own catheter? I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know of this product.
Yeah, you know. So wear adult diapers to the Cubs games, but if they're peeing, obviously those are the guys, so the women are dancing outside of the...
It was ridiculous, and the concourse was extra crowded. There was nowhere to walk. I mean, you have nicely constructed ramps in one area, and then you go to the other side of the park, and there's like cobwebs hanging from the stuff that's over 100 years old. So it's just...
How confusing.
There's a lot going on there. And it's also funny because there's the same situation on the field. It's like the Cubs are trying to get you to balance... Seriously.
They want
you to balance patience, but also change. Does that make sense?
All mics can be on, Craig.
No, that's great. We won't expect a lot from the Cubs this year if the stadium's not even built. You're going to lower your expectations a lot just by looking around.
And then you give John Lester, their ace pitcher, $155 million, but the offense gets shut out. They strike out 12 times.
Wow.
It's fun to lose 1-0.
3-0.
Well, yeah.
It could have been 1-0.
It didn't really matter since we got none. Whatever they had was still going to be the winning score.
But it was like the same old song and dance. But oh, by the way, there's a 3,900 square foot video board in left field that was rotating pictures and ads and everything.
Did you get to see replays? Because every time I went to the Cubs game last year when the Braves.
He seems to be very excited that we're going to have a Jumbotron.
You'll be a huge fan of the Jumbotron.
And how about Sam?
I didn't grow up with it. I didn't grow up with the big green magic board with a guy standing behind it. And I get it. I get why you guys like it. Baseball history, I'm so on board. But also, give me a freaking replay. If I'm gonna yell, that was a strike, and I'm just an idiot who's just coming from the side angle and don't know. Now I know. Now I can yell informed.
There were tons of replays, but it's funny. This is so Cub-like because the replays were all sponsored. I swear.
That terrible play brought to you by Pepsi.
Captain Morgan replay.
Oh, man.
And the Sports Authority replay. Everything on this board is sponsored.
And is it like, I don't know, I've never had a Jumbotron once, like maybe I've gone to...
You've never had a Jumbotron? I haven't had a Jumbotron either, for the record.
Doesn't the United
Comiskey
Center
I've been
one?
To, I don't know. I
most
don't,
stadiums that were built after
1950
I don't look at them. Basketball's
fun. Well, the Jumbotron is beautiful if you're in the park. If you're on a rooftop, looks awful.
Well, but I mean... Because
you see the back of it.
And so it begins.
Sam, will you hang out with us? We have a baseball...
Sure.
The Cubs historian coming up after 12:30.
Sure.
I'm sorry, you said something to me, Elif, and I was so intrigued by Sam's passion and everyone's passion in the room. Joseph's just trying to take it in. Did you say a break or go to the news?
Just a break.
Just a break. Let's just go do that right now. 720 WGN.
Baseball season's underway. Well, you better get ready for a brand new day. Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are gonna win today. They're singing, go Cubs, go! Go Cubs, go! Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are gonna win today.
Even when the Cubs lose today, we still say, go Cubs, go. And I'm proud to welcome to the show the Cubs biographer, Rick Kempfer. And I have in front of me, Rick, the entire list of every Cub that's ever played for the Chicago Cubs. Maybe not, but how are you doing tonight? Oh, hold on a second. There you are. Hello?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, there I am. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So what'd you think of tonight's home opener?
Well, you know, I guess it was fitting, considering that Ernie Banks was tributed tonight, and mm-hmm. Ernie played in more losses than any other baseball player in history. So I guess it was only fitting that we lost one today. But let's go win two next time. How about that?
Hey, there you go. Whenever that comes up, I just want to introduce you to all the guests that I have. I have a full studio because we're talking all baseball tonight. The whole show is baseball. So I thank you for joining us. We have Brandon C. Price from VAMP, and he has shows every Friday and Saturday night at 10:30 at MCL. Sam Pettionovich, who was at the game today, does our sports reporting, and we have your own show. Yes, sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah, hit or miss.
Yeah,
high school footballs. I had the show on that other station that we used to have.
There you go. No, that one. Yeah. And that. He, by the way, Rick, he was at the game today. Now, were you at the game or watching it on TV?
I just watched it on TV.
Have you seen any of the footage of what was going on with the lines for the bathrooms and the traffic around the stadium?
No, but I did hear that report, and I'm pleased to report that at my house, there were no lines.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. I had a great moment where I was watching the Cubs. Well, not great, because both teams were losing, but I was watching the Cubs and listening to the Blackhawks on WGN, and I was like, wow, St. Louis has got to be so loud right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that hurts to lose two to them.
We also have Craig Collins, who's a Yankees fan. We forgive him for that. He's my producer on weeknights. Joseph Giannini from Paired Wine Company, Two Italians Deli and Pizzeria, and has brought us food from all the places, from tortas and tacos. So go find him there. And Adam Selzer joins me too. We've relegated him to the back of the studio. Can you tell me a little bit about, how long have Cubs players really, how far back would you say Cubs players have dealt with being the lovable losers? When did that really emerge as a sort of tone to the team?
To be honest with you, it really didn't start until the 50s and the late 40s. There's a famous Saturday Evening Post cover that Norman Rockwell did that features a Cubs manager looking really, really sad. And it was based on Charlie Grimm, who was the Cubs manager at that time. And that goes back to, I think, 1948 or so. But before that, the Cubs were one of the best teams in baseball. They were in the World Series 10 times.
Right. And
hard to imagine.
It really, really is. Because when was the last time they were in the World Series?
1945.
Right.
So this is the 70th anniversary of that.
Wow. It's a little bit sad. What is it like being a biographer of a team that has had that much of a gap between... I mean, well, they won in 1908 was their last big World Series.
Well, there are so many great stories, though. I mean, I think it's one of the most interesting clubs out of all of them in terms of some of the weird people that have come through and some of the strange stories that have happened to them. I mean, the Cubs have had not just one player shot by a crazed fan. They've had two.
What?
Yeah.
Tell us a little about these two victims of
In 1932, they had a player named Billy Jurgis, who was the shortstop, starting shortstop on the Cubs, who was shot by a crazed fan, a female fan, who lured him into her room and then shot him. And then the same thing happened in 1949 to a player named Eddie Wakis, who had just been traded away from the Cubs. It was his first game back to Chicago, playing the Cubs at Wrigley Field, and after the game, he was lured to a room by a crazed female fan who missed him and shot him, and actually that story was the inspiration for the Natural.
I was going to say it sounds familiar.
Yeah, did either one of them come back and have a knock out all the lights at Wrigley?
They both came back and they both played for the Cubs. Billy Jurgis played for the Cubs, and Eddie Wakis played for the Phillies.
That's I had never heard those stories.
I always shoot people that I miss. That's how I show them.
It's the best way to tell them that you miss them.
Right. Really, there's a clip that I'm hesitant to play because I tried playing it a little bit on Friday just in the studio with my guests. I had Elliot Serrano here, and Bill Serrano was up in traffic, and I mentioned 1984 and Steve Garvey stepping to the plate, and they had to wrap their ears. They couldn't get far enough away from the thought. Can you tell me a little bit about that series? Because that was a season that Sutcliffe went 16-1, and I was a kid, and that was when my heart was broken.
Yeah, mine too. I was in college. That was the year that the Cubs won the first game of the playoffs, 13-0.
Right.
And then they won the second game, and they won that one pretty convincingly. And then all they had to do was win one game in San Diego. They played three, and they lost the first one. And then the second one was the one where Steve Garvey hit the home run in the ninth inning to stab us all in the heart. And then in the game five was the one where the ball went through Leon Durham's legs.
You know, it's funny. I remember the home run more than I remember. I know everybody remembers Leon Durham. I don't know why. I guess I must have had some sort of mental shutdown that I blocked that out, because I remember the home run more than that. Do you remember? Because I was watching the games, and I thought one of the strange things was the stadium, the way the light hit the pitcher, the way that it came over when the sun was going down. Do you remember that at all?
No, I don't. I might have been crying too much.
No, because there was a. I was watching it again the other day, because the way the stadium is built and the shadows that it casts, I always thought maybe they couldn't really adjust to the light. Like half the field.
Did that make you feel better?
No, it didn't. It has never made me feel better. I mean, for you, what would you say is worse, that series or the Bartman Ball series?
Oh, by far it was that 84 series. I mean, for me that just was a crusher, because I was 100% sure the Cubs were going to win.
Everybody 100%
was. 100% sure. For the Bartman one, that wasn't quite as bad for me, because as soon as that happened, I realized it was all over. You know what I mean? Everybody in the whole crowd was like, oh, here, I guess it's all over.
I guess that's it.
Yeah. We had a good run. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I felt that time.
Is it not easier to blame some random dude that made a mistake other than your heroes? I got to blame the Cubs for 84, but I can blame this guy for the Bartman series.
I never blame Bartman. I always blame the shortstop. The ball was hit right to him.
Alex Gonzalez.
Yeah.
I always blamed him.
It's interesting you said that you gave up, because I think the Cubs did too when they saw the Bartman play.
Even though it was Mark Pryor on the mound in Game 6 and Kerry Wood in Game 7. It's Bartman's fault.
Yes.
Well, I never thought it was Bartman's fault, but if you watch the show that they did a couple of years ago, the 10th anniversary of that, and they interviewed Moises Alou, he said that he and Aramis Ramirez decided to book a flight back home to the Dominican Republic after that game. They're like, oh, well, it's all over.
Oh, jeez.
Thanks a lot. I had tickets to Game 7. You could have saved me $150.
Oh, man. Now, the season after 84, was it they went on strike in 85? Am I misremembering that too, or was it? Do you remember?
No, didn't go on strike. What happened in 85 was their entire starting rotation got injured.
Basically the same thing.
The whole starting rotation. What do you mean?
I think I pitched four or five games from them that summer.
Patty, I like how you say misremembered. That's very Roger Clemens of you. That's awesome.
I misremember a lot of...
That's awesome.
No, this is how much I honestly believed, and I think I've told this story several times, I thought the Steve Garvey was the series ender. I really don't remember. I don't remember that it was Jody Davis that goes down in the ninth inning of Game 5. I don't remember that at all. I thought it was Steve Garvey. I don't know why. But that was my team. Jody Davis, Ron Say, Keith Moreland, Leon Durham, Ryan Sandberg. I was a kid. That was the only time I cried and realized, well, I probably shouldn't like them so much.
That's why I could never deal with that no crying in baseball phrase. The only time I've ever seen my dad cry was 92. Sid Bream, he's safe. Mm-hmm. Giant grown man just teared up, and I was like, oh, it's okay to cry.
you'd be happy to know, guess what song the Cubs ran out on the field to tonight?
What did they run out to?
Jump by Van Halen. That was their song in 84.
Oh, wow.
They ran onto the field to that song tonight.
Oh, no, that's callback.
There you go. We are talking to Rick Kempfer. He is the Chicago Cubs biographer. And do you mind hanging out with us for a little bit longer?
Sure.
We're taking a quick break right here. We're talking all baseball tonight on my last Sunday night show. I'm here Monday through Friday, but this is my last one. And it's a love note to baseball. And we're glad to have all of our guests hanging out with us right now, pretty late.
By the shores of old Lake Michigan, where the hawk wind blows so cold, an old Cub fan lay dying in his midnight hour that told. All around his bed his friends had gathered. They knew his time was short, and up on his head they put a bright blue cap from his all-time favorite sport. And he said, it's late, it's getting dark in here, and I know it's time to go. But before I leave the lineup, there's just one thing I'd like to know. Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls around? When the snow melts away, do the Cubbies still play in their ivy-covered burial ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave, the land of the free, and the doormat of the National League.
I can listen to the entire song, but it goes on for about 6 minutes. We have on the line with us Cubs biographer Rick Kempfer, and that is Steve. What's the name of the singer?
Goodman.
Steve Goodman. And I could listen to that whole song. I mean, there are so many people who, you know, I don't know if you can't really live and die by the Cubs anymore. I don't know at what point in your life that goes away where you go, oh, I see what's going on.
Well, yeah, you learn a lot about life as a Cubs fan.
You do.
But it's the greatest fan base. I have so much respect. As
thank you.
Craig, I'm sure you can back me up. We're fans of good teams, and
oh,
maybe not. Like, oh, but it's so much. I don't know how hard it must be.
I can't imagine being a fan of the Cubs. Actually, that's got to be difficult.
That's a Craig Collins, producer Monday through Friday for Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, is a Yankees fan.
Born and raised. Not
Brandon C. Price with Vamp Friday and Saturday nights at MCL is a Braves fan.
Very proud. Born and raised.
Okay. Enough. And what? Rick, when would you say you go from living and dying to going next year?
For me, it was the thing we were just talking about earlier, that 1984 year. That kind of opened my eyes to life. I was like, oh my gosh, look at that. Is that the sun? Is the sunshine?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, how good were they up until then that we were that enthralled by them?
I grew up, my first year as a Cubs fan, this is going to sound even worse, it was 1969.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. There you go. Sure.
And, you know, Ernie Banks was my hero, and Billy Williams and all those guys. But they had a lot of great players, and I always had fun at the ballpark. And I always say to people who, besmirch the Cubs thing, it's not like once you're a fan of a team, it's not like you can logically decide, you know what, now I'm a fan of the Twins or something.
Those are the worst people.
You can't do that. You're not rooting with your brain, obviously. You're rooting with your heart. So that's kind of how I feel about it.
I've told this story before, and I always hesitate to explain my family history and tradition with baseball because my dad loved the Cubs up until about the age of 10 years old. My dad used to sneak out of school, and actually he would sneak onto the trolley. He would steal a ride on the trolley, and then he would sneak into Wrigley Field to watch the Cubs because he did live and die by the Cubs. But he also used to go and ask for autographs or try to meet the players. And one year, one of the players told him to go F himself. And my dad was 10 years old, and he didn't know what that word meant. And he went home and asked his mom, who slapped him. And he didn't know. And it was, and here's the thing, it was Phil Cavaretti.
Really?
Yeah. And my dad, my dad hated the, he, the next year he would sneak into Wrigley just to yell at Cavaretti in the outfield. My dad attributes his drop in his batting average with him yelling at him all kinds of slurs and, you know, hey, spaghetti or all these different things. And, yeah, I mean, but that's what baseball is like. I mean, you know, if your heart is crushed, you never let that go.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah, he hated the Cubs for the up until I knew my father was sick when he was sitting in front of the TV. I don't remember who it was. 2001. My dad had his. I remember he was leaning in. You know, all just boxers and you know the sleeveless you know undershirt and he's leaning into the TV. And he goes, you know what? The Cubs look good. And I was like, oh, the end is near. The end is near.
It's like Steve Traxel was probably on the mound.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I'm sure Kerry Wood was playing. You know, but
I think Don Baylor was the manager that year.
Yeah, he had a standing bet his entire life. From whatever age he started having money, he had a standing bet that the Cubs would not finish over 500, and he always came out ahead, almost always.
Yeah, you know, my best friend is a White Sox fan, and actually at my wedding, my four best friends and my brother, they're all White Sox fans, and they were standing up at my wedding.
Oh, man.
I know. So, you know, I kind of understand what it's like to live in the belly of the beast there.
Yeah, well, my dad would take me, because I'm Mexican. My dad was Irish. My mom is Mexican. And my dad would take me when I was really little to see the Dodgers when Fernando Valenzuela was on the mound. And my dad would wear a sombrero. And he would be behind the Cubs dugout. And my dad would start, like, yelling things in Spanish to Fernando. He's like, Viva la raza!
Wow.
My dad was a character. And I actually got an autograph from Fernando. He did not tell me to go F myself. It was very fun.
Oh, good.
So I think that somebody had a question about the 89 Cubs. No.
You told me if I didn't have a trivia question, I had to leave. So I had to rifle through. Oh. Rick, now the famous double play combo in the early 1900s was Tinker, Evers, and Chance, correct?
That is correct.
Can you name the third baseman that often gets forgotten?
That would be Harry Steinfeld.
He's good.
Poor
he's
Harry Steinfeld. Where's Harry Steinfeld in all this?
Harry passed, unfortunately.
You know, I know, but I mean, in the mythology of the Cubs.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Harry Steinfeld actually was in the 1907 series. If they had such a thing at the time, he would have been the MVP of that series. The first World Series that the Cubs won, which is 1907, the year before 1908. He was the star player. He was the RBI machine. He was the final piece of the puzzle that finally put the Cubs over the top. Yeah. And he had a brain aneurysm when he was, I think he was 30 years old. He died very young.
Whoa.
He died in 1914.
Wow, you're right. The Cubs have this kind of really colorful past. I can't even wrap my mind around all the players. I'm looking at this. I'm like, why do I know the name Cap Anson? Where does he stand in baseball history?
Cap Anson is in the Hall of Fame. He's he was the Cubs manager for I want to say 25 years or something like that. He also, and this is kind of a black eye for the Cubs, he also is the one that instituted the color barrier.
Wow.
Because he refused to take the field when another team had a black player. And after that, it was kind of an unwritten rule amongst the other teams, because Cap Anson was the star player in the whole league, to not have any black players, to not anger Cap Anson, who was a racist. He wrote a book about his life. It's so gruesome. I mean, by today's standards, granted, he died in 1920 or something like that, but if you go back and read that now, you just say, okay, yes, the man was a racist.
Well, and I guess
that's why we're cursed.
Sure. Well, and I guess it's also fitting I guess it's also fitting that he had the most hits, most runs, most doubles and RBIs and highest batting average. Only Ernie Banks played in more games and had more at-bats. I kind of like that.
Yeah, that's true.
Patty, do you know the original name of the Chicago Cubs?
I don't. Yep.
You don't?
I don't. I don't think I do.
I'm sure Rick does. Rick, you want to fill her in?
It was the White Stockings.
I was looking at that. I saw White Stockings. I was like, why does it say that? From 18, that was a team that Banson played on.
And then they were the Chicago Orphans.
They were the Orphans. They were the Colts. And then they became the Cubs. Because what happened, I think it was in 1890, there was a player revolt. All the players didn't like the Cubs owner, and they formed their own league. And the players that were left on the team were so young that that's when they were called the Orphans. And then, you know, that eventually morphed into the Cubs. That's when they became the Cubs.
So tell us a little bit about the site that you write for. This is Just One Bad Century.
JustOneBadCentury.com is a site where I've written a bio on literally every player who ever played for the Cubs. So if you ever want to learn about Cubs lore, that's the place to go.
Well, we're not only that, but we're going to have you on again very soon to talk a little more baseball because I think it's fascinating. As you said, it's such a wonderful and rich past. There's so much texture to it that I can't get enough. But I do appreciate your time so late on a Sunday, I guess, into Monday morning. Rick, where can people find more of so it's all at JustOneBadCentury.com?
JustOneBadCentury.com. Yep.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Can we get a quick prediction from Rick
for
this year?
Oh, yes.
Just a real quick prediction. What's going to happen this year?
I'm going to say they're going to be 500 this year. That's my guess.
So
and then next year, look out.
Oh, look at that. Once the stadium is finished, once the ballpark is finished, we're ready to go. So you're saying my dad would have lost his money this year?
I'm saying your dad would. No, you know what? 50-50. I'm not willing to go that far.
You know what? And that's why he made the bet. Rick Kempfer, thank you so much.
Sure.
And we look forward to talking to you again.
No problem.
So much. More after this on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. And again, such a fun night. It's all baseball. Baseball season has started, which means only good things are going to happen. Even if the Cubs lose, and they did, and apparently people were peeing in cups in the
and people peeing
what
in
a
cups,
night.
Both at Wrigley and abroad.
I don't understand what happened at Wrigley. Apparently, I saw Sandra Jindra. Is that her name? Sandra Jindra from Channel 9 News. She had posted these pictures of just huge crowds outside the bathrooms. You couldn't tell who was going to the men's room, who was going to the ladies' room, and apparently the bathrooms are not ready to go. Some of them were closed.
Had to take a couple of them out just for construction, just to allow all the trucks and everything to come in and store stuff. So they had to remove.
No.
Oh, yes. They took out.
What can we live without?
You know, we really don't need all these bathrooms in here, guys.
I'm going to have to say you need to get the bathrooms done
especially
first.
Considering it's opening night at Wrigley. Yeah. Think of how much time these people had to drink all day long.
Yes.
No work today.
None.
Or yesterday, at least. That's an inopportune time to not have enough bathrooms.
And the amount of pictures I saw on Facebook, people were so excited to be at the game. I mean, there's something just magical about being at the home opener. You know, the tribute to Ernie Banks. I'm just excited because baseball has started. It's my favorite time of the year. It's spring. It reminds me of being a kid. It reminds me of hanging out with my dad. Plus, I get to hang out with Mark Carmen every week anyway. We're going to talk more baseball. Mark Carmen, it's Carm. How you doing?
Hi, Patty. Congratulations on your last Sunday show.
Thank you, which means I'm only Monday through Friday, everybody. For those of you who are excited that I might not be on at all anymore, calm down. For those of you who are worried, thank you. But, Carm, did you – because I listened to the Hawks and I watched the Cubs. How did you manage today's series of games between the Bulls, the Blackhawks, and the Cubs all losing?
Well, it has been a rough day, and for all the Chicago sports fans out there, whatever team is number one in your heart, it was a rough day. But I, of course, watched the Bulls game and saw some of the Hawks, but then I watched the entire Chicago Cub disaster, and I was very proud because we stayed true to form, and this is what we've done for centuries.
No, you're right. Centuries is correct. Last
was that
century?
A Fall Out Boy reference? Because they played before the game.
I didn't know that was perhaps you know we could tie those two together. But if it works, I'm good. And I mean they were awful. They were pathetic. And So I feel like they'll only go 161-1. So we lost one, and we've got 161 more wins coming. It's only one game. I'm staying positive.
Are you?
But that was brutal tonight, Patty. They were as bad as you could be.
Sam was telling us about the disaster that was happening both on the behind the scenes in the and the bleachers aren't done, but they covered it with a tribute to Ernie Banks. Is that right?
Right. Well, in left center and right center, they had the Ernie Banks tarps because there's nothing under the tarps. They were kind of transparent, but they couldn't put tarps on the left field and right field foul pole areas because they had wood paneling there.
Right.
So you had the nice tarps in the center and in the alleys, but then in the corners you had like ugly wood,
press wood.
And construction materials. So it was like it was pig lipstick on the pig, for that matter.
Now, Elif has a little clip that Sam has shared with us. Did you hear Theo talking about the Jumbotron?
No, please. Carm. I'm excited.
Okay.
Can't wait.
Bated breath. Can we play that? Here we go.
I was telling you it's way too big, and you're arguing that it's not too big, even though you know it's probably too big. That's how I thought I would be, and then I got here, and it was just perfect.
I've never had that experience.
Wow.
No, I'm kidding. I don't even know what that means.
Neither have I.
Exactly. There you go. It's just right. He sounds like Goldilocks or something.
I'm going to go to my first Cub game of the year Tuesday night. I was planning on going tonight, but it just didn't work out. Sam, seeing it to me on TV, it looks fine. It looked good, and I thought the tarps looked cool. I can't wait for a ball to actually land on one and see what happens and where it goes. Is it bound out onto Waveland or Sheffield? Does it come back onto the field? I thought the park actually looked good. Minus, Sam, were you able to go to the bathroom in the media area? How did you?
The press box was fine.
Yeah.
Outside of that, though, every other level had problems. There were people, I had talked to some fans that said they had to wait 30 minutes just to get in the bathroom.
Ugh. Yeah, I get that they need, they're under construction, they're remodeling, but bathrooms are kind of one of the things you need to, you don't want to have people leaving cups of urine all over the ballpark.
And they were running out of food at certain stands, too. Ran out of pizza, ran out of some hot dogs, so there was just chaos all over the place.
Which, why, with all due respect to the fine food products that the Cubs put out there, why would you ever go there to eat, honestly?
Frosty malts, man. Where else do you even get a frosty malt?
And we had the owners of Wiener Circle in earlier and Red Hot Ranch, and they were saying go eat at their place, too. So apparently they're not wrong about that.
No, go way back in the day. They have made it more difficult. Back in the day, you could go to like a Yum Yum Donut. That's way back. Get yourself a couple hot dogs, bring them to the park. But there's got to be something you can do nowadays. And I think that they need to have an open door policy until this is fixed. You should be able to walk in and walk out if you have a ticket stub. Don't worry about people passing ticket stubs off to friends and
can
whatnot.
You do that? You can't do that?
They were letting people leave tonight.
To go to, well, you almost have to, because I would think there would be a riot, especially if people...
Patty, there's nowhere to walk. Yeah. You couldn't walk. If you're on the bottom concourse, you couldn't walk around.
Do you guys have any idea if there have been other parks that have had the same situation under construction during an opener?
Most people leave the old one open and redo the new one. I think because it's this park in Fenway that can't afford that luxury.
Yes,
I think you're just specially screwed.
Well, like when the Bears were renovating Soldier Field, they went and played in Champaign
for
a season. I mean, usually you don't rebuild and remake. Yeah,
just play around it.
Well, at the same time, yeah. Yeah, don't mind that there's no bleachers.
Right.
Spray some Febreze on it. It'll be fine. It's fine.
We'll just put some Ernie Banks
sluggers and then get in here.
Now, Carm, we've been, obviously because the Cubs opened today, we've been focusing on the Cubs, and because this station has been so entwined with the history of the Chicago Cubs, and that has, we've parted ways. We miss them. We love that we're still a Cubs station, but we're also a sports station, too. We love all of our teams. How are the Sox looking? Because right now they have a better record.
Well, we got that's true, they do. You've got the defending American League champion Kansas City Royals welcoming the Chicago White Sox tomorrow, and Jeff Samardzija, the former Cub, now former A as well, I guess I should say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm optimistic for both sides to be way more competitive this year, Patty. I think Sam would say the same thing. It's they've got Samardzija was an addition that I didn't see coming, and you've got, seemingly a healthy Chris Sale, and you've got one more year on Jose Abreu, who had a phenomenal rookie year. Plus, you've added in some veterans and Adam LaRoche. Their lineup should be a lot more potent. I'd say the I'd say that Sox fans should be feeling very much like they're going to be in the mix this year. And by the way, Sam Panionovich is a Sox fan. I don't know if he's outed himself yet.
Not yet.
That's all right. No. I'm look.
You think LaRoche is going to have a good year?
Why not?
Oh, are you proverbially saying why not, or are you asking me why not? Because yeah. I think he's exactly a veteran right. on the slump. I think, right? It's the numbers go the certain direction that they go.
I see. I've always liked Adam. I don't think he's – I mean, I'm not saying he's going to hit 350, but I think you'll get a solid 275. I think you'll get 20 homers from him, which is going to be a vast improvement from what you've been getting from Adam Dunn.
Well, Paul Konerko, too. I mean,
and Paul
poor Paulie. Yeah. I mean, at the end, Carm, I mean, you know, we went and watched batting practice. He couldn't even swing the bat.
Yeah,
it was
a rough ending for Paulie. I was actually probably the only person in this city that appreciated Paulie coming back last year, just because I love, you know.
He just broken down. That's all.
He was. The little victory tour, though, I feel like we all should be entitled to that. I think it's an upgrade. I'm not looking for all-star numbers from Adam LaRoche, but I think they've definitely. It's a fair play. I mean, go to a little 2-year deal for an Adam LaRoche. I give Rick Hahn props for that move. He's not like, it's not like they're not going to be good. They're relying on Adam LaRoche to have a great season. That's just one part of it.
Although I do like his ads on YouTube. Craig is a Yankees fan. You guys want to talk Yankees a little bit and see what is that looking like this year, Craig?
I think the Yankees are going to be incredible this year. I don't know what Mark thinks. No, I really do. I mean, C.C. Sabathia's been pitching well.
A-Rod's
I know it's just
back.
The preseason. Yeah, right. A-Rod's hit a bunch of home runs.
Come on, dude.
Hopefully
you can't get on the
juice.
A-Rod camel here.
I'll get on the A-Rod. I will. It's okay. I know that he cheats and stuff, but as long as he does it on my team,
cheats,
I'm okay
cheats.
With that.
I don't care about cheating. I care about production and not being
a bunch of home runs.
Did you see the picture, by the way? They had A-Rod when he came to training camp, whether it's Arizona, it's in Florida. The Yankees are in Florida. And he's carrying this ravaged, like, taped together cardboard box. And it was so, like, what's in that box? You know, he's got it over his shoulder, and it's like, all right, there could be drugs in there.
It
was all taped up, though, and ripped, and there were holes in
look,
it. Just
look at this.
Really sketchy.
Most baseball fans should cheer for A-Rod this year. And the reason why, he took a whole year off, a complete year off. If he comes
did
back
he
and plays
a year
anywhere.
Off, or was he given a year
he
off?
He was given a year off. He was asked to
oh,
leave.
Did he? You know what?
If he comes back and plays well, that is as good of a comeback story as you can possibly have.
Wow, how did you do it, A-Rod? I can't stand him, even if he wasn't a jerk, because he takes Chipper's numbers away. He makes Chipper look not as amazing, which is hard to do, being the greatest third baseman of the modern era. A-Rod bouncing off those numbers, I don't like him for that anyway.
Mark Carmen, come on, back me up a little bit. If A-Rod plays well this year...
Craig, I appreciate your loyalty to your team.
Isn't it an impressive comeback, though, if he plays well this year?
Wouldn't Tiger
shocking.
Woods be impressive if all of a sudden he golfed well? I mean,
yes, he actually would.
All right.
Craig, have you met A-Rod? He's maybe the most disingenuous athlete I've ever been around, and that's saying something.
I'm not defending him as a person. At not one point have I said that I like A-Rod as a human. But if he plays well as a baseball player this year, that has to be an amazing comeback story. That take a whole year off and play well.
Okay, that's fair. I don't think he's going to, but if he does, I guess we'll give him some props.
Silver lining. Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
And to our other fan who's not a Chicago baseball fan, Brandon C. Price, an Atlanta Braves fan.
And I know about this year. We don't have to talk about it. We lost Kimbrel today, and that's it.
Hey, you traded your best reliever.
I mean, we had to get rid of Melvin. I can't believe I'm calling him Melvin. He changed his name from BJ to Melvin because that'll make you better at baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But we got rid of him. He's to the Padres now, so he's back with his brother, which clearly really works. I don't think any price. We're all ready to pay anything to get him out of there and get that money dumped. But losing Kimbrel, we better go in 4-0 to the eighth every time. We don't have a closer.
Wow. I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was opening a wound.
We got rid of every one of our outfielders. Every single one.
This is a therapy session, Patty. Look what you've done.
My father taught me to take baseball as 90% terrible suffering and pain. Mm-hmm. And just expect the worst.
Aren't you a Braves fan?
Yeah.
You, spent years being in the playoffs of the World Series.
14 consecutive years if you must know.
Yeah,
14 treacherous years.
Yeah. I went to see the Cubs playoff game against the Braves in 98, and it was in Atlanta, but half the stadium was Braves fans. The Braves fans were so bored and jaded to being in the playoffs.
Wow.
Yeah, it
that nobody
us,
showed
though,
up. So, all, so it was all us Cubs fans there.
Yeah, and no. They,
I shouted things I'm not proud of.
Yes, Carm?
It is important, I think, to mention when you bring up the Braves that they were the team that gave the Cubs the greatest amount of joy we've ever had in our pathetic lives as Cub fans. And that, of course, was the 2003 division round when the Cubs actually won a playoff yep. series with Kerry Wood on the mound in Game 5, which was the greatest moment of my sports Cub life. That was spectacular.
And so Wood beating us is, if it's got to happen, you know, I'm glad it was.
Well,
him.
That year, too. It was a great year. Carm, around the league, you and Sam, what do you guys think about, who are the teams to look at?
Go ahead, Carm.
You want me to lead off? Well, I mean, I honestly, watching the Cardinals tonight, anybody who's picking against St. Louis in the National League, I think, is very unwise, certainly in the division. The Dodgers are loaded in the West, and out East, a little bit of a surprise Miami Marlin love right now going on, which is a little bit weird, but that division's wide open, so I'm picking the fish. Why don't you take the AL, Mr. Panionovich?
I think the Tigers are the team to beat, to be honest.
Yep.
Wow.
But I do think one Chicago team makes the playoffs this year, and it's not the Cubs.
Why?
Wild card for the White Sox. Wild card for the White 17. Sox, Carm.
That's a bold pick.
And then they lose in the first round, but, I mean, that's fine.
You know, Brandon just said that 2016 for the Cubs. A lot can happen, and I know that they're bringing up these guys. They sent a lot. What did they send, like half the team back to the minors? They all got on a plane to Iowa together? What happened? Mm-hmm.
Well, Chris Bryant, who is their stud prospect, and, you know, if he has 150 service days or less, he gets an extra year on the back end, so they're keeping him in the minors just to get that extra year control.
So, what, like a 10 or, like, what, 12 games?
They can bring him up in, like, 2 weeks,
okay,
essentially, and then he doesn't skip a beat. They also sent on Javi Baez and Addison Russell, but ironically enough, guess who is on a billboard outside Wrigley Field right now? Chris Bryant.
Really?
Adidas bought a billboard outside Wrigley.
Oh.
And I think it says the temptation is real or something like that.
Oh, great.
But
money was spent.
He will come
up bar pretty high.
Very yeah. shortly.
Carm, thank you so much for joining us. And when can we hear you next?
It's my pleasure, team. I'm not sure the next time that I'm going to be on, Patty, but I will be the first to
let me know. You do know because you'll be here on Wednesday.
We'll have him on Wednesday.
Yeah, we'll have you on Wednesday. Also follow him at The Carm on Twitter and on Facebook, Mark Carmen. Why are you laughing? I love having you on every Wednesday. You teach me stuff.
No, I just like when you go into my every... And I, by the way, you can Facebook me. We can be friends. I'll go any medium to get to any form of...
You'll be pen pals with people?
Yes. Yes.
Did you get that Pinterest account up yet?
I'll go... Yes, Sam. I'll go self-plug... Fansided.com have a piece on Chris Bryant today, which, Panionovich, I don't know if you've taken the time to read it, but I doubt you agree with me. It's really spot on, and Cub fans should see the light of what I'm bringing to the table here.
I want
to
see it.
I think we should have a duo on one of these Wednesdays, me and you.
Yeah, if you guys came in studio, I would love to have you both on. It's just easier.
Absolutely.
You make eye contact. I like to see you guys square off. It's more fun that way. Carm, thank you so much for joining us. Get some rest,
thanks,
will you?
Guys.
I know it's a long day of sports. It was a lot.
I appreciate you having me, Patty. Have a great rest of the show.
Always. Thank you so much. It was a really long day of losing. I don't understand. Well, let's just have some more fun. By the way, we're all enjoying some great food from Joseph Giannini with two Italians, Deli and Pizzeria, Paired Wine Company, Tortas and Tacos. He's waving like you want to talk a little bit about memories. Hello. Yeah, exactly.
We're taking selfies for like 5 minutes.
Adam Selzer, historian, tour guide, and also has a book out recently, The Flicker Empire.
Flickering Empire.
And we'll talk more baseball when we come back.
Oh, sure. I'd love to talk about that magic summer of 1989.
Again? We're talking 89 again?
1989.
That's my childhood just
Dunstan
coming back.
Dunstan to Sandberg to Grace.
Okay, more after this with Craig Collins, Sam Panionovich, and Brandon C. Price, and producer Alf Garris. We got Nick DiGiorgio up there. This is so much going on. I can't. Bye, Sunday.
What do you want to talk to me about?
Well, when you got to the majors, you played only one inning of one game. What happened that inning?
It was the last day of the season. Bottom of the eighth inning, we were way ahead. I'd been up with the club about 3 weeks, but I hadn't seen any action. Suddenly, old John McGraw points a bony finger in my direction, and he says, right field.
Yes, sir.
I jumped up like I was sitting on a spring.
Grabbed my glove and ran out on the field.
Did you get to make a play?
Never hit the ball out of the infield.
Get
came in to see if it was over. I knew they'd send me back down. I couldn't bear the thought of another year in the minors. So I decided to hang them up. Oh, sit down.
Thank you. So what was that like?
It was like having this close to your dreams and then watch them brush past you like a stranger in a crowd. At the time, you don't think much of it. You know, we just don't recognize the most significant moments of our lives while they're happening. Back then, I thought, well, there'll be other days. I didn't realize that that was the only day. And now, Ray Kinsella, I want to ask you a question. What's so interesting about a half an inning that would make you come all the way from Iowa to talk to me about it 50 years after it happened?
I didn't really know till just now, but I think it's to ask you if you could do anything you wanted, if you could have a wish.
And are you the kind of a man who could grant me that wish?
I don't know. I'm just asking.
Well, you know, I never got to bat in the major leagues. I'd have liked to have that chance just once to stare down a big league pitcher. To stare him down, and just as he goes into his windup, wink. Make him think you know something he doesn't. That's what I wish for. Chance to squint at a sky so blue that it hurts your eyes just to look at it. To feel the tingle in your arm as you connect with the ball. To run the bases, stretch a double into a triple, and flop face first into third. Wrap your arms around the bag. That's my wish, Rickensella. That's my wish. And is there enough magic out there in the moonlight to make this dream come true?
What would you say if I said yes?
I think I'd actually believe you.
I want to go there. I've been there. I've been to Dyersville, Indiana. Is it Dyersville, Iowa? Dyersville, Iowa. Yeah, I've been to the field where they filmed A Field of Dreams. But what's so great when you watch that scene again, I think when I saw it as a kid, it doesn't mean nearly as much. Mm-hmm. Until you get older and you do think about the moments that brush right past you that you don't realize. I mean, there's so much more than just baseball in that scene. Burt Lancaster, one of the greatest actors of all time, playing Moonlight Graham. And by the way, one of the great moments that we've had on this show, I don't even know if it was a Sunday night or not, Craig, but we had one of Moonlight Graham's patients.
It was, yeah, I think it was a weekday.
Yeah.
One of Moonlight Graham's patients called in to say how lucky she was that he became a doctor. Instead of a baseball player.
He would make sure if a family didn't have enough money to buy glasses or to go to the dentist, he would make sure that they were taken care of.
Yeah, if she's listening tonight, call in again. Please say hi to us.
312-981-7200. Anybody. And if we are missing a clip from a movie, I don't know how fast we can pull it, but we can always talk about scenes. Most of these have come from Bull Durham and Field of Dreams and A League of Their Own. We have a few from Moneyball. Craig was telling me last night, what about
61? You got to pull stuff from 61.
What about Major League?
Good movie. Yes, Major League.
Pride of the Yankees. Man.
Well, yeah. Okay, so the problem I had with the Luckiest Man Alive was that I wanted the original, and I was telling Craig this as well in the middle of the night while we were watching Fleeting Suns at their CD release party.
Great show.
Oh, it was amazing.
Fleeting Suns, really good show.
I can't find the original. I actually wanted Lou Gehrig, you know, because we all know the sort of made, I am the la-la.
Today, I consider myself, self.
Because the real speech is so incredible that I wanted the real speech because it's so moving. But I would say Field of Dreams. I was telling Elif, and Elif, have you seen any of the movies I sent you clips of?
No.
It was fun. I felt so bad because
I'm glad that I'm much older than her, and I've seen nothing.
Because you're not a fan of baseball
that
or of movies.
She's not seen. Yes. So I feel we're connected at least.
Oh, yeah, we are.
There's that lack of knowledge.
I don't think Field of Dreams, I don't think you have to be a fan of baseball to enjoy the magic of that movie. It is about, more than anything, it's about your relationship with family and where you belong. About
and
magic.
Having faith in dreams.
It's yes.
Having faith in what you love.
It's a religion. It's like Ebert said, I think it's a religious movie and that the religion is baseball.
Well,
but
that's
that feeling that you get, whether you're at a religious, whatever your religion
religion is, and you're raising your arms and you're feeling that spirit. I hope this isn't sacrilegious to very religious people, but that's the same tingle you get when baseball happens, right?
Well, and that's why we open the entire show with Susan Sarandon and the Church of Baseball from Bull Durham, because when I was a kid when I saw Bull Durham, and like that monologue that opened, that's another movie I think you would actually get a kick out of, with Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins and Kevin Costner.
I like eating nachos out of the baseball cap.
Isn't that great?
That's my highlight.
I will bring you nachos out of a baseball cap if you would just watch it. If Bull Durham is the only baseball action you get,
oh my God. People are like, why is this guy on WGN and he knows nothing about sports?
Because
I'm cute and I bring good food. That's why.
Well, you bring good food, and you have brought good food for the 2 years that I've been hosting Sunday night and the weeknights, and I wanted to celebrate with you. And I know you haven't been able to come in for various reasons, and you had wanted to come in to talk about a little bit about what happened in Indiana, and we're not going to dismiss that. I also want to talk about that before we go tonight.
Oh, we can talk about that fun stuff.
And you brought a pizza. You brought a pizza with a pepperoni.
Pizza at Two Italians. Yes, we do. There are so many more memories to be had. Pizza.
And the thing is that, like, I didn't even know that's the name of the pizzeria in Indiana.
Called Memories.
They said they would not serve. They said they wouldn't cater a gay wedding, or they wouldn't serve gay people. Was it both?
They said they would not cater a gay wedding if they were asked to.
By the way,
that was the joke amongst.
And how many gay weddings?
Oh no, we can't get Memories Pizza.
Damn.
Well, the wedding is off.
You have to love Facebook, and you have to love people that can like instantly whip up an image to like completely crush your world. Because I saw that, and it was like, you know, two like hot hunky gay guys standing side by side with a knife cutting a piece of pizza.
Yes,
you know, it was like the next big gay wedding. And you know, I posted that day because, you know, I don't know if you've met me yet, but I'm all about that marketing train. So as soon as I heard they would not serve, I was like, well, I don't like straight people, I don't think. I don't think they should come in my restaurant anymore. And if they do, I don't want to serve them. And if you want to start me a GoFundMe campaign and get me $800,000.
Yeah, are they at the $800,000?
I think it passed like a million.
They were over half a million last time I checked.
This part.
Oh, they had a GoFundMe.
Oh, it's like $900,000.
Yeah, so give them money if you're in on the stupid.
Okay, let's we'll get the numbers.
We'll talk about that.
We'll get the numbers in a moment.
Yes.
So
that's the joke behind the pizza. But.
By the way, the best thing was really Pat Robertson. But before we go to the news, do I have news or do I have a break?
What the hell did Pat Robertson do?
Oh, I got that
just
story
news.
Too.
But here's my question, and it pertains to our show. So Indiana, wants to, not the whole state. And we know there are many people who were not in support of this legislation.
Bill Cerrones, I believe, lives in Indiana.
Yes, not
I joke about him all. I joke about that all the time.
Do they have a major league team? Baseball? Do they play baseball?
No, they have a AAA affiliate in Indianapolis.
Yeah, maybe they want to go ahead and fix that before they go ahead and discriminate against gays.
Or you're special. You're paying me $7 million a year, man, so yeah. Maybe I am, a little bit.
No, man, I ain't paying you $7 million. Yankees are paying half your salary. That's what the New York Yankees think of you. They're paying you $3.5 million to play against them.
Where are you going with this, Billy?
David, you're 37. How about you and I be honest about what each of us want out of this? I want to milk the last ounce of baseball you got in you. And you want to stay in the show. Let's do that. Now, I'm not paying you for the player you used to be. I'm paying you for the player you are right now. You're smart. You get what we're trying to do here. Make an example for the younger guys. Be a leader. You can do that?
All right, I got you.
We're cool?
We're cool. Scotty H.
Yo, what's up, DJ?
Pickin' machine. How you liking first base, man?
It's coming along, picking it up, you know. Tough transition, but I'm starting to feel better with it.
Yeah? Yeah. What's your biggest fear?
A baseball being hit in my general direction?
That's funny. Seriously, what is it?
No, seriously, that is.
Well, hey, good luck with that.
The first 2 years I played Little League Baseball, like all day, the day of a game, my stomach would be in knots just thinking about the ball coming to me when I was playing in the outfield. Ooh. I would just get nauseous. It was tough. I was not very good when I first started, but I kept playing. I kept showing up, you know?
What's your best memory from those Little League years?
From Little League, I got my first hit my third year playing. I mean, it took me 3 years to get my first hit, and I got a single. I was playing for the White Sox, and just connecting that ball in a game, I mean, not being the one who was the third out in the last inning, or just finally making it, and the next day, I'm not kidding you, I was in the hospital with an appendicitis. I'm not even, I couldn't play the rest of the
season.
I got on base for the first time without having to lean into the pitch, without crowding the plate. I did not. I never winked
at
the pitcher.
Don't wink at him, kid.
No. Yeah.
So you're telling me you got to first base and that was it.
And that was it. Okay, that was it for a while. It took me another season to get back. And that's my greatest memory. And I have another one. I played softball at Lane Tech. And by that point, I'd gotten better. And there are still players who remember. We played at Horner Park, and we had diamonds that were back to back. So I was in center field, and the guys were watching our game, and I made a diving catch. To this day, I don't remember those. Like once you start getting better, you don't remember those moments. But they a diving rolling catch.
Nice.
You know where you bring it in, you make sure you hold out. When you learn how to hold on to
the ball as you're laying on the ground,
exactly.
So everybody knows you caught it.
I got it. Yeah, it's a great moment. How about you?
Oh, unquestionably, my first coach pitch home run. My first real pitch home run, ironically, my dad was not there for it. And my dad was everything, the whole reason I did it. He was watching my sister's game. She was playing softball. But my first coach pitch home run was a couple years before. May have been inside the park. I don't remember. I was very young, and I was a very emotional child. So as I'm rounding third, I make eye contact with my dad, who's behind the dugout.
And
I just
cry?
Lost it.
Oh.
But the coolest part of it was not only that day, which I remember specifically, and I have the worst memory ever, but I remember that moment, that feeling. But my father was a sportscaster for Channel 10 in Mobile, Alabama at the time. And so he and his sportscaster friends broke down my tape because that we had it on a VCR.
What?
And so they did a little segment. I'm sure it wasn't on the actual air, but they gave me the tape of like what it would look like if I was the highlight reel on Channel 10.
I still have
it somewhere.
That's a great tip.
That is cool.
That's great.
Wow. Everybody didn't have that.
Pretty on point.
That's very cool. Yeah. No, I don't think my dad was at any of the games that I remember. I mean, he used to show up and I could see him leaning against a fence smoking a Camel non-filter, but he was always on the third baseline.
My dad had a Marlboro Light and a can of regular Coke. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And was very supportive from his not very talented. I mean, I made the All-Star team from center field a couple of times, but, you know, I'm an actor, so you don't get both.
No.
And I'm
a really
good actor. So.
You really are.
Really committed.
Yeah. Craig, you played baseball?
I did, yeah. No, I remember making an All-Star team, which was really cool, but I think my favorite memory is just crushing a pitch thrown directly at me, and I'm a little tiny kid, and it was way up inside. I crushed it, and as I see it go up in the air, the pitcher, who's super tall, jumps and catches it.
What?
And it was the most devastating moment, but it was also that was a life lesson right there, because I thought that was gone.
Oh.
And he just super jumped in the air. Okay. All right.
Snatch it.
Yeah.
Snatch it.
But that is my favorite baseball memory, is getting that pitch stolen or hit stolen.
Adam, Joseph said he had a big one, so I'm coming.
Okay.
Can I come
now I see where this is going.
I'll just do a quick one. Yeah, I played when I was a kid. When I was 11, I think, my batting average was in the 600s.
What?
I wasn't a power hitter, but I could put the bat on the ball. And there was one time I hit it, you know, almost out of the park. I got to second base, and the second baseman said, "Man, nice hit."
Wow.
From the other team.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a nice moment.
Yeah,
me,
when the other team tells you, I don't think anybody ever.
Nobody got it out of the park that whole season in any game that I played.
But that's a
couple
sound,
more
though.
Feet, I would have made it. Yeah, well, it was a ting because, you know, we used aluminum bats.
Yeah, but it's just that sound and then the ball into the mitt. It's just those two things are so visceral.
Yes.
They're just they have so much more to them than just the sound. And there's even if somebody nabs it and catches it, like you said, Craig, there's still you cracked it.
Yeah, yeah. Where can we find a batting cage right now?
Oh, let's go. Sluggers
after the show.
Yeah.
Let's roll.
I'm going to the Wiener Circle and then we're going to Sluggers. Let's go. I'm not kidding. So Elif wants to go and Joseph wants. Who do we go first? Joseph and then
No, mine's more incredible than everybody's.
Oh,
so I'm
Elif.
Just going to
let's
say
see.
step on and tell your story, because I got one.
All right. Well, I was probably 9 or 10, and I used to play baseball in the backyard with my cousin. That's the most that I ever did with baseball. But I didn't grow up in the United States, but I still kind of got into it through my cousin. And I skinned my elbow once. That's my story.
That's your, you skinned your elbow? It's a memory, though. You're like, this is so not. This is not my thing. Well, the thing about backyard baseball is, like, it gets intense, too. If you have anybody that, like, anybody that tries, like, tells you they want to do do-overs, you walk away from that game. There's no do-overs.
There's no mulligans in baseball.
There's no mulligans. I just remember, like, I remember playing street ball, and someone would be like, oh, I want to do-over. Yeah, it's not. I'm done with you.
Every time I beat my brother at wiffle ball, he'd throw the bat at me and start yelling, change.
Oh, no. Like, it's too intense. Joseph.
Yeah, it got rough.
Are you ready for my story?
I'm ready for your story.
So I actually got to throw, and I forgot about this story. I'm sitting here like sulking in the corner because everybody's like all into these sports and telling these stories. And I forgot that like I'm up there with, I think the president or maybe the mayor. I got to throw out the first pitch at a Chicago White Sox game.
How, what in the world? How did you get to throw out a first pitch?
How did you forget that for a while?
Well, you were with the mayor or the president?
Just for a second. Okay, so now the plot thickens.
Yes.
I might have been dressed in a dog costume at the time I did it.
Okay. So that, so people didn't know it was Joseph Giannini?
Nobody would know.
They knew.
Except me. I have a picture to prove it, though.
Well, why were you dressed as a dog?
So every year, Urban Outfitters, my company, has been very privileged to sponsor dog days at the Chicago White Sox game.
Okay.
So Ozzie Guillen was a client of mine for a very, very long time. Do you know this?
I know that Oprah was a client of yours.
Yes, and Ozzie Guillen walked in. And here, you know, okay, my partner and I, this is a funny story. Ozzie Guillen walks in. And most people, if Ozzie Guillen walks into the room, goes, hey, you're Ozzie Guillen.
Sure
at the time.
Yes, we
I think it was just like either right after they won. Like, he was a superstar. He was a superstar. I mean, he was.
No, Ozzie Guillen before. Ozzie Guillen's a superstar. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he. And at the time, he was like super, superstar. People were like, oh. So, and he lived in the West Loop. And my business was in the West Loop. And he walked in. And he walked up to my partner and said, I want to board my dogs. I'm leaving today.
Sure.
Here they are. And my partner says, I need vet records for your dogs. Which, of course, you know, that's a good question. We're a dog place. We should have
vaccinations.
Yes. And he goes, I shouldn't tell this story.
You're
he has my partner
it.
A core, his business card and says, tell your boss to call me.
Ooh.
And Tommy goes, but I am the boss. I'm one of the owners. So
how does this work?
Who are you and what do you want from me, basically? Yes. And Ozzie's like, well, I'm Ozzie Guillen. I'm the, you know, the manager for the White Sox. And Tommy goes, oh, okay, well, we still need your vet records. Which was the biggest. And so he calls me on my cell phone. He goes, some guy, Ozzie somebody, is here. And he wants to board his dogs. What do you want me to do with this guy? And I was like, is it Ozzie Guillen? And I knew that much.
Right.
I'm not dumb, completely dumb, but.
Right, because the only other choice you have is Ozzie and Harriet. Ozzie and Harriet.
Ozzie Osbourne was the
Well, I would appreciate Ozzie Osbourne maybe a little bit more than being in my place at that time. But
sure.
They have more dogs. Anyways, I just said, you know.
How do you know what celebrities have a lot of dogs?
Take it, because that's my business.
I know.
Take his dogs in and we'll figure it out. We'll call the vet. We'll get the vet records. Obviously, his dogs were up to date on vet records. So, excuse me. After that year, he says, how about you come and sponsor the Chicago White Sox? I love you. You're great. And I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So every year we set up a dog, a big giant dog balloon, and we go there and we sponsor and we lead out the parade for the dog day games. Where
right. Do they still do the dog
they
day?
They still do dog day games. The White Sox are great for that. And I'm going to convince – if anyone is listening from Wrigley Field right now, the Chicago Cubs needs to do a – dog day game.
I'm surprised Steve Dale hasn't convinced them yet, or you. Either one of you guys.
If the people don't have a place to pee, where will the dogs
pee? Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
You know what? If the dogs start the trend of peeing on the field, maybe the fans will join in. Yeah. We'll just all pee on the field.
So you get to throw out a first
so
pitch?
So I got to throw out the first pitch, and guess what?
What?
I think I made it.
I love you can't remember. You don't
well,
have
I had a big dog head on, so yes. I kind of remember the... the ball getting thrown, and it kind of did, and this is bad for radio, but it kind of did the big arc, the
Ephus pitch.
Yes, is that what it is? I threw it very high, and it landed, but he caught it.
Sure.
Which meant I threw it a very far distance as far as I was concerned.
How far did he throw
it? I would say almost 55 feet.
I would say about that.
Is it 55 feet?
Are you sure it didn't bounce?
Look at you guys doing that. It did not bounce. It just went very high. It arced.
See, it would have been funny dressed as a dog if you'd thrown it and then chased it.
That would have been very
Let Patty
cute.
Go this year. Let Patty do it this year.
Save it for this year.
Save it.
Patty's dressing up like a dog this year.
How great would it be if you like threw it and you're like, sir, running? You're like, sir, wrestling with the catcher.
See, and that's why you're a comedian and I'm not, damn it.
More after this. It's all baseball tonight. Thank you so much, everybody. It's our last Sunday night for Pretty Late. We're going to be on Monday through Friday only. And starting next week, it's going to be a new show. It's going to be WGN Theater. More after this on 720 WGN.
You catch a good game.
Thank you. It's so beautiful here.
For me. Well, for me, it's like a dream come true. Can I ask you something? Is this heaven?
It's Iowa.
Iowa?
Yeah.
Could have sworn it was heaven. Is there a heaven? Place dreams come true.
Doesn't he say you want to play catch? Do you want to have a catch?
Catch
I know, we're all like, we're all waiting for him to ask his dad to play catch, which is what makes us all cry. Because, actually, Nick DiGilio is in the studio now, and he had Field of Dreams at Movie Co. just last year, a year and a half ago. How long ago did we do? It was last April, and we just played that clip at the end of the movie where he asks his dad to play. He asks him if there's a heaven, and
want to talk about baseball tonight? Seriously? Seriously?
Just for the whole season. This is my last Sunday night show, and I thought I'd go out talking about baseball. We've done the whole 3 hours talking about movies and history, and we've done it all, and it's been fun. Actually, before I move on, let me just go to Bob, who wanted to join the conversation real quick. Hey, Bob.
Hi. How are you?
Well, I'm good. How are you doing? What's up?
Not too bad. Just wanted to let you know my niece and her boyfriend just got engaged on Saturday morning at the Field of Dreams Park.
Yeah, at the house there?
Yeah, he took her out there as a surprise. They were going that way, and they stopped there, and that's where he decided to ask her to marry her, and she said yes.
Oh, I'm hoping she was a fan of the movie.
Oh, I guess that's why he did that. He was a big fan of it.
I was going to say. Oh, that's lovely. Well, thank you so much for letting us know. How cool.
Yeah, just also, thanks for, now you're not going to be on Sundays. That's the only night I get to listen to you the whole night.
Oh, Bob, I'm going to miss you. I'm sorry, but we've got Calamari is going to be here doing Chicago WGN Theater. And it's going to be very fun. I'll be on Monday through Friday. You can always catch me on iTunes or on WGNRadio.com, too.
Well, awesome. I'll still get to hear you here and there, but not all the whole show.
Well, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it. I'll miss you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
It sounded like you called him Squid.
Yeah.
Carl Amare. Amare?
It's
Amare.
Carl Amare, not Calamari.
Yeah, it sounds totally different from to
yeah,
me.
It's deep fried.
Never heard that before.
Carl?
Carl Amare.
Amare. Yeah.
Just so you know, we have calamari at the restaurant.
It's available Carl on the menu. Amare. Like, he never gets that. Like, I'm the only one to make that mistake ever. But it's easy
like
to remember.
Have Squid hosting the show?
we've been talking all things baseball. And I know, yeah, look, you win, you lose. How is this different from any other season that we have disappointing
well,
anything?
Well, people were peeing in cups.
Yes, that's bad.
There were like 5-hour lines for the bathroom.
Bad. Yes.
Yeah, it was different.
But this is all things baseball. It's not just Cubs. Yeah. And we are both wearing.
I didn't watch the game.
No, I watched.
I watched the Hawks game, which was also not good.
Well, it's weird that it was all St. Louis. I know where I could turn, that I could get away from St. Louis. But we're both wearing our seventh inning stretch hats, which just, yeah. I I was looking for my son's t-ball hat, which is really the one that fits me. But I was like, oh, right, I did this
thing. That's adjustable.
I know. It is adjustable. I know. I have a really small head. I'm wearing children's glasses. These are Disney Tinkerbell glasses. That's how small my head is. But now I when we were talking to Megan Cavanaugh, who starred in, she was Marla Hooch in A League of Their Own.
I hated that movie.
Well, having grown up playing
that movie,
and that was the only movie I liked because Madonna was in it.
Right.
Well, Madonna rules. I'll give you that.
And
she was good in that. She's smoking
a
cigarette.
The only thing I remember about that movie, there's only one thing I remember about that movie. I remember not liking it. But the only thing I remember is that Tom Hanks takes a really long pee.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They're all.
That's sort of the only thing that I take from that movie. That's how good it was. That Tom Hanks took a really long pee.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed that movie, but they filmed a lot of that at Wrigley, and she was talking about her dad being a lifelong Cubs fan, and it was a closed set, and she got to bring him in and sit in the dugout.
No, and, that's cool.
Well, for us to go out on the field, I mean, like, I took a picture of us with our shoes in the grass. I mean, just walking out there.
Did I tell you about the fact that I spent 7 days hanging out with Gary Busey?
No.
Have I not told you these stories?
I don't think I know about you hanging out with Gary Busey for 7 days. No.
I spent seven days and nights in a row hanging out with Gary Busey. Mm-hmm. He took a liking to me. He was in town filming that stupid movie where the kid breaks his arm and then
Rookie of the Year.
All right, so he was in town filming that.
Right.
And I was dating this girl that was way out of my league. Like, she was really hot and had no business being with me. And she could get into, like, VIP areas of places and stuff because she was so hot.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guys by the rope would be all pissed because, like, they had to let me in. They're like, God. Like,
wow.
We're going to let the chick in, but you idiot. And, you know, she'd be like, well, he's with me. So we went into for some reason, she enjoyed the China Club.
Okay. Many people did at the time.
Doesn't exist anymore, obviously.
For reasons.
But we were in the VIP room of the China Club, and I look across the room, and it's Gary Busey. And I'm like, oh, my God, that's Gary Busey. I have to go over and talk to him. And I walk up to him, and he's got, like, a Hawaiian shirt on. He's all, like, his hair's crazy, and he's all talking. And he's having this conversation with somebody. And I just walk up to him, and I'm like, listen, I don't want to bother you, man. I'm just a huge fan. I think you're great. And Point Break is one of my favorite movies of all time. And he goes, Point Break changed my damn life. And then he grabbed me, and he wouldn't let go of me for seven days.
Just lost
and
7 days.
Whatever you think about spending 7 days with Gary Busey, double that,
sure,
quadruple it, and make it even crazier. And that's what it's like spending 7 days.
Yeah,
with
I don't even know if we can wrap our
sounds
minds.
Like a movie
wasn't
title.
Wasn't that a TV show?
There was a show. Yeah, my time with Busey
with
or something
Busey,
like that.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was like a stand-up comedian. And that was a documentary, man.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Here's another little tidbit for all the people who have seen this Rookie of the Year movie. Fake mustache. That wasn't a real mustache.
There you go. Now you know.
He did not have a real mustache.
Well,
couldn't grow it out.
Ruined.
I don't know.
He still holds up for me. I still dream about landing on my bike real bad and then becoming a 30-year-old major league pitcher.
Yeah. Yeah. Nick, well, there was no throwing him back tonight. He couldn't throw the ball back tonight.
What's coming up on your show tonight?
Movie reviews. The greatest movie ever made opened Friday, and it made $143 million.
Well, there you go.
Is it
called that,
or it is?
Furious 7 is the greatest movie of all time.
There are flying cars. I want to thank Brandon C. Price of Vamp, Friday nights and Saturday nights at MCL. The show sets at 10:30, and people can go to what website for that?
MCLChicago.com/Vamp.
And we'll see you on Wednesday for our lullaby,
As always, thank you so much for having me.
Of course, Joseph Giannini with Paired Wine Company. What do you want to do? You want two Italians?
I want a GoFundMe campaign started for me because I hate people.
Will you come back and talk about Indiana whenever you want, sir?
We'll talk about Indiana. We didn't get to that, but we had a lot to talk about.
And Adam Selzer.
I think it's done.
Adam Selzer.
Hey, how you doing?
And your website?
AdamSelzer.com or MysteriousChicago.com as
and
well.
He's got his tours and his book, Flickering Empire, the era, the history.
The silent film in Chicago,
And we'll have you back on when we can all have... I mean, this is a lot of conversation. Also, Craig Collins, thank you so much for starting with me 2 years ago and coming along for the ride. Elif, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much. I'm sorry that you just found out on Friday. I didn't mean to surprise you.
I am sad, but
we'll be back.
And we've had fun. But...
We have. And thank you for pulling a bunch of clips of movies that you had not ever seen.
Oh, no problem.
And I now need you to see all of those movies.
Actually, they look good.
At least Field of Dreams. I'm going to need that. Maybe Bull Durham as well.
Okay.
Thank you. And also thank you to Caitlin Fry, to Dan Long, Dan Levy, all the producers I've had on the Sunday nights for the last 2 years. Thank you all so much. Nick DeGiorgio, I'm sorry. You should have just jumped in at some point. You know that I get distracted.
That's right. I'm a football guy.
Oh, well, there you go. So we'll talk to you in August. How's that sound?
Sounds
no,
like
I mean, we'll
plan.
Talk to you before then, but you know what I mean.
We will.
Nick DeGiorgio is up next. Do I have a break or am I going right to the, am I all done? Oh, I have a, let's do this first because I haven't wrapped up yet. I've thanked everybody except for all the listeners. I thank you so much for giving me the chance. If you had given up and came back, thank you for the second chance. If you were just hoping that I would get better, I hope I have.